Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Is it my imagination or you just have a lot of serious stories today?
We have quite a few serious stories today, and certainly beginning with our Chicago police officer.
Horrible shot story.
Early this morning, horrible. Just getting off duty. Ugh. And 2 days away from his 31st birthday.
Horrible, heartbreaking, terrible.
And we do not have the name of the officer yet, no. Or circumstances that were involved.
We're working on it.
But Ryan Naburo and our WGN News staff, Courtney Spinelli is at the University of Chicago Medical Center.
Right.
And the procession has taken place from the medical center to the medical examiner's office. This always occurs. It's
taking place already? Or
yes,
was it
yes.
About to?
Yeah, it just is wrapping up at
just
this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm listening to the news because you know I listen to every single one of your stories.
I know you do.
Digest it.
I know you do.
And I thought, ooh, serious story. Ooh, another serious story. Ooh, Andy's got sad stories.
Mm-hmm.
It puts a lot of pressure on to like lighten the mood a little bit here today.
Well, we'll strike a balance.
Do we have any kitty cats up trees today or anything?
I saw a story yesterday.
Any pie eating contest?
No,
anything like that?
You mentioned cats being in a tree, but I saw a story yesterday where people were actually pulling bear cubs from a tree to take selfies with them.
Oh, seriously?
Yes.
That's smart.
That can only go one way, right?
Yeah.
And you know what was amazing?
Especially when the mother bear shows up.
Well, exactly. You know, I was just going to say, the mother bear was nowhere to be found. And these bear cubs were in the trees. Oh. And these people are like, oh, let's take the little critters and hold them and take selfies, which they did. And, you know, the mother bear was not around. Had the mother bear been there, this would have been a different story.
Much.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's a sad or a happy story.
Well,
I'm going to put that in the sad category.
Put that in the rather sad category for a number of reasons.
I'm going to put that in the Schwannies bringing us down today category. I'm going to go ahead and say that that's my favorite song of the year so far. You know this one? So of course, it's Tracy Chapman. That's her original song, Fast Car. But country star Luke Combs joining her for a duet. They performed it on the Grammys. It's such a good version of them together. Fantastic. Fantastic song. Fantastic version of a song. And that was the reason that producer Jack wasn't here last week.
He was in a fast car?
These young punks.
That's causing trouble.
Uh-huh. Oh. Luke Combs was performing in Milwaukee last weekend, and Jack thought it was more important than being here to actually do the show.
Oh.
I did.
Did you go to both shows?
No, just one.
Did it live up to your expectations?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
Jack tells me that he is now the equivalent of Elton Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here we go.
I've gone twice.
He's seen.
Oh, okay. Well, you're off to a good start.
He's seen two Luke Combs shows now, so now he wants me to call him Jack Combs.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Hammer Combs.
Hammer Combs. Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. Was the show amazing?
Yeah, it was good.
I really like Luke Combs a lot.
Yeah, they said it was an attendance record. They played.
Really?
He was at American Family Field where the Brewers play, and they said it was an attendance record.
Wow.
It was packed.
Now, besides this song, what are like some of his big songs?
Hurricane is a big one. Ice Cold Beer, Long Neck Ice Cold Beer Never Broke My Heart.
Mm.
That's a good one. I mean,
you know that one, don't you?
Oh, sure.
Oh, an ice cold beer and it broke my heart.
See, this is fun. Normally, I'm sitting here having no idea what you're talking about. Now, Schwani doesn't know what we're talking about.
Well,
it's a nice little turn in the tables.
Yeah, we like to spin the table once in a while.
Well, I know the song. I've heard the song you just played. Could I tell you anything about it? No.
But, but I've heard it. Really?
No, not
Fast
really.
Fast Car
is awesome.
Now, Tracy Chapman song.
As, you know, down the road, as you go to more and more of these concerts, Jack, are you going to see to it that he calls you out in
right.
the audience?
You have to hold up signs.
Yeah.
And practically beg for attention like Elton Jim does when he has gone to see Elton John.
spray your little Glade thing around, you know, so you can smell it.
Yeah.
The air freshener.
Yeah. Just so he knows the hammer's here.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hammer's
hammer
here.
Hammer time, yep.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm going to say if you're going to pattern yourself after anyone on the show, Elton Jim is probably the last person. Not that any of the other of us are role models either, but... Well, I'm glad you had a nice time.
Yeah, it was fun.
The show practically dissolved last week without Jack Hammer here to...
I was made aware.
the whole David Hochberg paella thing from last week.
Boy, you missed that. Talk about Jack talk about me, a display.
I feel like I didn't.
Yeah, tells me that he got all the details.
Talk about the display in the kitchen.
But
wow.
You know what? That never would have happened if Jack was here last
time. Oh, no.
No.
Jack doesn't allow people to leave stuff just laying around.
From 9 to 1, I run a tight ship around here.
Yeah.
Got to keep you in line, Schwani.
You got a lot going on.
Yeah. I see him parading.
We are your fast car.
He parades up and down the halls here during the breaks. You know, like he's keeping guard.
Monitors the hallway. I would probably have never seen the disgusting mess that was left out last week.
Oh, I think you would have. Because we noticed it when we got in last week, and I'm thinking, just wait till Dean gets in.
Yeah, look, people that worked in the Wrigley building could smell it.
The Wrigley building? The Hancock Center.
Yeah, right.
Sears Tower.
Yeah, Jack smelled it in Milwaukee.
I woke up. I was like, what is that?
What does that smell?
Luke Combs wrote a song about it.
That's right.
Well, I smell some paella in my beer.
Then it broke my heart.
Well, anyway, everything's back to normal this week. As normal as it gets around here.
Okay. Welcome back. I wondered why you weren't here last week.
He's very busy. A lot of people take off, you know, family emergencies, one thing or another. Jack wants to just go see a concert.
Mm-hmm. I got my priorities in order.
Yeah.
The important things.
Yeah. There you go.
So you couldn't go to the concert, and Milwaukee is not all that far away, and just come back the next day and work the show then?
You know, the last time I saw him at Soldier Field, I came in, and that was just not fun.
Oh.
So this time I learned from my previous time.
I see.
What do you do at the concerts that you're so wiped out?
Oh, I'm singing at the top of my lungs.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Really? Seriously?
Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
That's the only time I sing in public.
Wow. And that's exhausting to you?
I was tired. I'm getting old.
How do the people around
you? Oh, listen to this.
How do the people around you feel about your singing at concert?
Well, my buddy was next to me, and we really like Luke Combs, so we were belting it out. The couple next to me probably didn't like it, but it's all right.
Yeah. We've all seen that at concerts, the two dudes that think they sound really good.
That was us.
Well, I imagine there were others there. You know, not necessarily the people sitting next to you, but, everybody else in the crowd of several thousand people where they were not all dead silent.
Oh, yeah. There was a guy like three rows in front of us, had two beers in his hand.
Attaboy.
Both times, and he was putting on a performance. It was almost as good as Luke.
Attaboy. That's fun. I remember when we used to be fun. Remember that, Schwani?
Back
in the old days?
I'll tell you, I remember.
I have photographic evidence of times when we used to.
Yes, I know. Oh, here we go.
So, one of my favorite things on Sunday morning, the game that I always play is, what kind of texts did Steve and Johnny get on their show last night?
Oh, cool.
Because, you know, the text line is continuous. And it pretty much stops when Steve and Johnny go off the air. The texts, you know, there's a few, but, you know, they pretty much stop then. And a lot of people text in where they're listening from. That's a big deal. There's all kinds of things. But this is the most interesting one today. My college roommate gave me 70% of her liver 3 years ago.
Okay.
It's an interesting text, isn't it?
It's a good roommate.
I imagine they were talking about some kind of a medical thing, a medical condition.
Some kind of like a donor deal?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Would you give me part of your liver?
I was going to ask you, would you
would you give me part of your liver when mine finally goes out, which could be any time now?
It did. Oh, I have to think about it. I don't know if we'd be a good match.
Well, I think we've proven over and over again
that
we
might
not
happen. Yeah.
Something interesting to think about, though, isn't it? I mean, think about your best. Jack, think about your drinking buddy, your Luke Combs buddy. Would you give him part of your liver?
Yeah, definitely.
There you go. Without even thinking about it.
I give it to you, too.
Have Luke write a song about it.
You can have part of my liver.
I had too many beers, and now I can't use my liver no more. I guess I would for like close friend or family member.
Well, the liver regenerates, so you know I would think that if you do, you know, make a donation of that kind, you know, the person who gives the donation, the liver will regenerate and perhaps regrow. Yeah,
right.
It's a miraculous organ.
If I donated my liver, I would also have to donate some onions because mine's pretty dry. Years of abuse. And that's my next question. Who likes liver and onions?
I haven't had it in a long time.
I think that's
many
thing
years,
don't
but
eat
I
anymore.
Do. I actually do like it.
You have to ask.
I haven't
really.
Had it.
We used to have that all the time.
Oh, we did
in
too.
Our house.
Yeah,
all the time. Liver and fried onions,
mm-hmm.
And I thought they were delicious. And you can't find them anywhere anymore. And I don't make it at home either. It's my fault too. But
Andy, how about you?
Do you have to even ask?
Andy,
come on! I'm growing up. You even told me that this morning.
You actually ate Brussels sprouts. That's good.
At our pre-show meeting,
during the rehearsal.
Yeah, right after our dress rehearsal. We
exactly.
We like to rap, share each other's thoughts, and we learned that Andy had Brussels sprouts after the show last year.
My wife was trying to prove a point.
Were they roasted Brussels sprouts?
They were in the air fryer, which is really
okay.
Good.
Well, that'll work.
Yeah,
sure,
really that's good. That's good stuff.
I love them.
Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Bet you there's not a lot of other shows covering this wide range of
topics. Not at this hour on a Sunday morning.
Today, like
no
we
way.
Are today.
No okay. way.
We're versatile.
We can have Luke write a song about Brussels sprouts.
Oh,
now,
I like beer and I like Brussels liver. Sprouts. Like Brussels sprouts.
Still all right. Not eating broccoli.
I checked. I wonder why Luke Combs is not coming to Chicago. I looked at his concert tour, and he's traveling all over the place. Milwaukee was the closest that he was going to be here.
Yeah, I think it's because he came here last year, and it seems like he's hitting like other places.
Alternate.
Where's he going now after this?
I think he's in Buffalo.
So are you going to that one?
No.
No?
No, I couldn't.
Okay.
Couldn't swing another day off.
Mm-hmm. Buffalo, and then where else from there?
I have no idea.
You don't know.
I know he goes to like Iowa.
Don't you have a t-shirt that has the different shows in the cities where they're performing?
I've used all my money to get in there. I couldn't pay $90 for a t-shirt.
Call yourself a fan. You have to go by the Elton Gym rule. Do I want to eat this week or do I want
there you
to
go,
go
see, go see another concert
this week? That's how it works. On the show today, the man formerly known as George Costanza. Visiting on the show today, Jason Alexander, who's rehearsing a brand new play that they will world premiere at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater this week. We've got them. We have comedian Eddie Izzard on the show this week. We've got a lot of good stuff this weekend. Other foods that we find gross, all coming up between now and 1 o'clock today. Presented to us each week by Dave Schwann. I have no funny intro for
you. I was wondering if there was going to be some sort of a name that you would
I was
attached.
Trying to come up with some liver reference to you, and anything that I came up with just didn't make sense.
So.
Medically, it didn't sound right to me.
And we have I'm assuming a medical segment coming up right after the news.
We do. Yes, Dr. Lauren Stryker is going to be with us.
Today. We can ask about this, about liver and onions.
Dr. Lauren Stryker, who, you know, always kind of has... kind of feisty topics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
is going to be talking about a new use for Viagra.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll be sure to record this.
Okay. Get your cassette recorder
Get
ready.
Your, cause my cassette recorder is ready. My 8-track recorder is ready. My Sony TC-353 reel-to-reel will be moving at 7.5 IPS.
Andy, why do I do this?
You think you'd learn by now, right? I mean...
And now here's the far.
Do you want 2-track stereo or just straight mono?
And how now far flung forecast.
Here is the far flung.
Thank you very much.
Protractors,
compasses, and protractors, and newfangled devices.
Newfangled devices.
We go up to a beautiful portion of the country in the northern section of Wisconsin today for Clear Lake, Wisconsin. At the 2020 census, the population was 1,099, but that was 3.5-4 years ago now. So perhaps the population is maybe 2,000 people. But a beautiful portion of the country, very scenic, and is also the hometown of one senator from years back now, a man by the name of Gaylord Nelson, who was very taken by the beauty of the area, stayed with him all of his life.
Wasn't he on I Dream of Jeannie?
I don't think so.
Well, that match game?
That was Tony Nelson.
That was Tony,
Oh, you're thinking Charles Nelson. Nelson.
Yeah. Charles Nelson Riley.
Wasn't he Ozzie's brother?
But Senator
Ozzie Nelson, Uncle Dean.
Senator Gaylord Nelson was one of the founders, in fact, got a bill passed through Congress establishing Earth Day.
Huh.
And Earth Day is tomorrow. So we've already seen some activity over the weekend about cleaning up neighborhoods in Chicago. And I've seen a bunch of things online about getting rid of various plastic and plastic items. Yes. We see stories about microplastics now getting
What's
into
that?
Water.
What's microplastics?
The little particles that you can't really see with your eye, but they get into the water. They're affecting animals.
Are we drinking it also?
Yeah, and we are drinking this.
Great.
So this is just what you wanted to hear, right?
I thought I tasted plastic today.
So, but
hang on a second. Yeah.
Can you taste it there?
Oh, it's definitely plastic.
Plastic out of a paper cup, too. I might add.
Is that out of like the filtered water bottle thing?
Well,
or does
that
it get filtered out of that.
This might come in through other sources, but filters do help.
I shouldn't drink out of the garden hose anymore.
Don't do the garden
like
hose
we used
anymore.
To when we were kids.
Oh, I know.
Nice cold drink
nice
out
cold
of the water,
out of water the
hose.
Just drinking it right on down. But Senator Gaylord Nelson was one of the founders of Earth Day
back in
1970.
That's a fantastic first name, by the way.
Gaylord Nelson?
Gaylord.
Gaylord. Well, that was for his age group. He was born in... when was he born? 1916. Okay, 100 and some years ago.
Were there a lot of Gaylords?
I knew gentlemen from that era of time that whose name was Gaylord. Oh. Yes. So that was a rather common name a century plus ago.
What were their nicknames?
Oh, who knows?
What'd you call them for short?
Gay, Lord, or just, you know,
GL.
GL.
Hey, GL.
GL.
Just G.
G. Just G.
But Gaylord Nelson from Clear Lake, Wisconsin. And they're chilly up there, but sunny skies. It's 35 degrees up there, going a high of 58.
And in honor of Earth Day today, I'm going to be recycling practically every joke that you hear on the show today, by the way.
9:36, Dean Richards, Sunday morning. WGN. You can always say what you want to say at 312-981-7200. I want to jump in here. We're going to get into our weekend health segment. Joining us this week is a friend of WGN-TV and also friend of our show as well, Dr. Lauren Stryker, professor of obstetrics and gynecology, Feinberg School of Medicine. Dr. Stryker, welcome to the show. How are you there, my friend?
I am excellent and always so happy to spend some of my Sunday morning with you.
Very, very nice of you. I miss seeing you because normally when you're on WGN-TV, it's on Wednesday when I'm doing my cooking segment,
and we get to talk a little cooking. We get to, you know, spend a little time together. But you've been busy. I haven't seen you in a while.
I am going to be there this Wednesday, and I can't wait to see what you're cooking. Do I get a preview, or it has to be a surprise?
I'm making a brisket and potato kugel. Guess why?
Okay, I just finished my brisket, and I will take on your brisket anytime because mine is an award-winning brisket. Oh. It is the most amazing brisket ever, and my potato kugel is a truffle mushroom potato kugel.
Oh, you
beat
win.
That.
You win. Yeah, you
win.
You win. I'm calling it. I'm
then,
calling
but I may
it
share my recipe
Wednesday.
With you for next year.
I'm calling it.
It's,
sick.
I'll bring the brisket. We'll have a brisket up.
We're doing a couple of little things for Passover. I mean, these are traditional things. Every family has their own recipe. I've come up with a couple that I think are kind of interesting and easy. All my recipes, I try to make sure they're delicious and also easy at the same time.
Okay, I'm going to give you a 3-ingredient recipe.
Oh, good.
That you are going to one day thank me for. This is my grandmother's.
Okay.
Everyone makes fun of me. I make it every year, and it always disappears. This is a Jell-O mold made with black cherry Jell-O, but instead of using water, use Manischewitz wine.
What?
And then suspend walnuts in it and black cherries. I kid you not. You can also do them as shooters for those that are being glad.
Right.
Manischewitz wine shooters.
Manischewitz wine, black cherry Jell-O, and walnuts?
I suspend black cherries, canned black cherries. I drain them.
That's
I soak the walnuts and the cherries in the Manischewitz wine. And then when the Jell-O is like half set, you know, you put them in and it suspends and it looks magical. And I do make one without the wine for the kids at the table.
Oh, that's
not
nice.
As good,
that's
but, you
fun.
Know.
That's...
But yes, it is a big hit.
I love that. I love that. And really, does anything scream Passover more than Manischewitz wine Jell-O?
Wine that nobody would drink it on any other occasion. My mother used to dip her matzah in it, which is probably the best way to embellish both matzah and the wine.
Oh, that is fantastic. I love that. Dr. Stryker joining this week to talk a couple of interesting things. And one of the stories that jumped out at me this week, if you'll excuse the pun with this, it's about Viagra.
And you're supposed to say one of the stories that came up this
right,
week.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's a new use for Viagra. Explain, because, I mean, this is actually kind of significant.
It is significant, potentially. A lot of these things, it was a little preliminary. But the headline is that in a very large study, it appeared that in men who took Viagra on a regular basis, they had a 54% reduction of developing Alzheimer's disease down the road. And, you know, and one of the things about, just to circle back a little bit, is this is yet another example of a drug that was intended for one purpose that you find may help in another, because originally Viagra was developed as a blood pressure drug, as a heart drug.
Right.
And what they found is that it didn't do much for the heart, but it did a lot for the penis. So, of course, they pivoted and the rest is history. But now as they continue to follow the outcomes of people taking this drug and other drugs, you find other potential benefits. And the thing that's interesting about this study is that my first impulse when I read it was, okay.
And there is our phone gremlin again. I cannot believe this. It seems to happen every week right during our health segment here. So we'll get Dr. Stryker back on the line again. It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable that this happens all the time and that we have not figured out how to fix this problem that is a very regular problem. I know it's not just on my show that it happens on other shows, but it does happen during our health segment each week. So are we back with Dr. Stryker? Yes, we are. Dr. Lauren Stryker. I don't know if you know, we have this phone gremlin that attacks every week during the health segment for some reason. But
I'm glad it wasn't me.
Yeah,
it was you.
No.
But anyway, so what I first, my first thought was when I read this study was, okay, well, we know that Viagra is a vasodilator. That's one of the reasons it works for erectile dysfunction, is it sends blood flow down to the genitals. And my first thought was, so, okay, it also helps with blood flow to the brain. But that's not what's going on here. What's going on here is with Alzheimer's, a lot of people who are familiar with Alzheimer's disease know that there's a protein called tau that that ends up kind of tangling up the neurons in the brain and causing these cognitive changes. Well, it turns out that in people that took Alzheimer's, there were less of those tau tangles. There was less tau. So it seems to be a direct impact on the cause of Alzheimer's, which is, first of all, fascinating. I mean, this is still a bit preliminary. This is kind of what we call observational data. They didn't do a controlled trial with this, but still. And then, of course, the thing that I think about is, well, if this does work, well, then we need to start getting women to take Viagra, too, because women are far more likely to get Alzheimer's than men.
Do you think that would be effective? Have there been any studies with that regard yet?
Effective for Alzheimer's or effective for sexual dysfunction?
Well, I was going to ask you about that in a minute, because I also did read that Viagra is being used for women, is being developed for women for sexual arousal. But let's stay on Alzheimer's for a second here.
Let's stay on Alzheimer's. There's zero data. There's no data.
All right.
But the only thing that we do know is that both men and women who get Alzheimer's have this proliferation of these tau proteins.
Yeah.
So it would stand to reason, but we don't know. There's no data. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah. If it works on one, why?
I mean, not always the case, because women are not little men. You know, there's a lot of things that people would say, well, it works for the guys, so it should work for the women, and it turns out not to be the case.
All right.
So, but it's an interesting thought.
Does it seem likely that because it is arousing blood flow, whether to the heart or to sexual organs or whatever, that it might be having that same effect on the brain? You said that it's affecting these proteins. Could it be that blood flow is attacking these proteins that are causing cognitive dysfunction?
It's a good thought, but probably not. You know, when we look at dementia, and there's different kinds of dementia, and there's something called a vascular dementia, and that it would impact, but this study did not look at that. But one would think, like, we know that estrogen helps as far as preventing dementia down the road, and it appears to be more the vascular than Alzheimer's. But it's a, you know, who knows? There's so much that we do not know. And it's not like this company is going to start doing these studies, because they generally don't. You know, once the drug is out there, it costs so much money to do these studies that they just kind of leave it be. And if people want to use it for something else, they do, which is known as taking something off label. Which is, again, you know, to off label, to your point that you brought up earlier, there are a lot of women that do use Viagra, as we say, off label. It's not FDA approved for that. But we do know that for women we have difficulty with orgasm, that oral Viagra in some women, particularly in women who have problems because of taking an SSRI or another antidepressant, sometimes Viagra will help them. And in fact, I did a podcast episode on that not very long ago that about, is your SSRI killing your sex life and what to do about it? And I was like shocked at how well the numbers were. So this affects a lot of people.
Very interesting with all of this. And Dr. Stryker talks about her podcast. It's called Dr. Stryker's Inside Information Podcast. And you can learn a lot more, you know, get into this a lot more on the podcast or through some of her.
And can I brag a little bit about
please,
my podcast?
Please.
Yesterday I got to be number 10 on Apple.
Oh, yay. Wow. That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah, number 10 in the medicine category, and I'm in the top 1% of all podcasts. So it has actually kind of shocked me how well it's done. I mean, part of it is I've got great guests. I mean, really great guests. But it, you know, it also just tells you there's a real need for women and men. I have about 30% male listeners who just want this information.
Well, you know, you talk about Viagra on your podcast, you're bound to get a few listeners that way. I'm going to start.
I'm going to start
bringing it up every week on my show, whether it makes sense or not. We'll be right back with more with Dr. Lauren Stryker. You've got questions, comments, you can call or text 312-981-7200. It is 9:49, and this is Dean Richards Sunday morning on WGN. Dr. Lauren Stryker in our Weekend Health segment this week, professor of obstetrics and gynecology, Feinberg School of Medicine, also author of a variety of books and a podcast, all kinds of places to learn more about her specialty. So the number one topic, Dr. Stryker, on our text line this morning, please have the doctor repeat her Jell-O recipe. So people,
Isn't that, I'm happy, happy to do that.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, but
it sounds fantastic. Yeah.
So this is the recipe. You do, it's black cherry Jell-O, and so the three ingredients, black cherry Jell-O, four ingredients, sorry, black cherry Jell-O, Manischewitz wine, whole walnuts, and black cherries in a can. So what you do is you make the Jell-O as you normally would, the black cherry Jell-O, but instead of water, I said you substitute Manischewitz wine. I usually do half and half because it doesn't set very well if it's all wine.
Right.
So you do half water, half Manischewitz wine, and meanwhile, you have the walnuts and the cherries, which you've drained, soaking in the Manischewitz wine.
Okay.
And then once it starts to set, then you start to put the cherries and the walnuts in at various times so they will magically suspend themselves throughout the Jell-O mold. You must take it the day before, because if you're making a large quantity like I am, I'm having 25 people, then it's going to take a while to set. So
yeah.
I make it the day before, and that's it. And I guarantee you, you eat it with your brisket, with your chicken, with your anything. It is delicious.
And has that become like sort of a family tradition with your family now?
It is. And yeah. They make fun of it every year. They're like, oh, my God, nobody makes Jell-O anymore. And I said, well, it's one of those things we remember grandma by.
And I'll bet everybody eats it up and they can't. If you didn't make it, they would go crazy, I'll bet, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
708 area code says, I am having a ringing in my ear. I'm told it's tinnitus. What do I do about that?
Yeah, so the tinnitus is actually, it is one of those conditions that while it's not life-threatening, it is miserable to walk around with that ringing all the time. And actually, there are neurologists that specialize in this. And the number one thing is to find out why it's happening. Sometimes it's because the little crystals in the ear are, just kind of like off balance. And with time, it'll take care of it. Sometimes it's because of a medication or because of something else. But the most important thing, like many of these things, is if it's not going away, to get in with the proper specialist who sees these things all the time. But there are a lot of different causes, and of course the cause depends on what the treatment would be. And sometimes it's very challenging to get a treatment.
I've heard
some people,
Yeah, I was going to say,
you have to wait it out.
I've heard people living with this for years, I just thought, well, how annoying must that be?
It's no small thing. It has a huge impact on people's lives. So I wish I could offer a quick and easy solution, but it's just, there isn't a quick and easy solution.
Yeah, that's what it seems like, and probably why someone's texting us about it now, because they haven't been able to get a result for themselves.
Sure.
The 312 area code says, I've been taking Ozempic for 12 weeks and have seen no results. Is it possible that this weight loss drug is not effective on everyone?
That is absolutely correct. What the studies show is that it is only effective, depending on which specific drug, in maybe 80% of people, 85% of people. An interesting study just came out, actually, that for women, particularly if they're peri or postmenopause, that women that use one of these GLP-1 inhibitors along with hormone therapy have 40% more weight loss than in people who are not using hormone therapy. And I don't know if this caller is a man or a woman or perimenopausal, but it's just kind of an interesting fact. But the main thing is it is correct that they are not effective in everybody.
There was a fitness expert, a health and fitness expert, who was a guest on Bill Maher's real-time show on Max this past Friday night, who was very much against any of the weight loss, the so-called weight loss drugs, saying that it's only a temporary fix, that if you don't stay on it for life, you're just going to go right back to your other weight again, that people plateau at these drugs, and at some point they just stop working, and that the real key to weight loss is eating less, exercising more. There's no substitute for that.
Yeah. Well, if eating less and exercised more worked for everybody, then we would not have the obesity crisis that we have in this country. Let's just start with that. The other thing is that when you take these drugs, it's never by itself. It has to be in conjunction with exercise and healthy eating. And as to the point that when you go off, you will gain the weight back, that is true for many people. But what they are looking at now is looking at maintenance doses, you know, rather than the dose that you use to lose the weight, instead of having to stay on that dose for the rest of the life, there's a lot of research being put into, is there a much lower maintenance dose, or perhaps is there another drug that isn't as costly or that's easier to use, that lasts longer, that can be used for maintenance? So I agree with some of that, but not all of that.
Yeah, it's very interesting, and because, I mean, it is sort of the miracle drug of our time, isn't it, where like everybody is trying to get on these weight loss drugs right now, which are really diabetes, you know,
and
medications.
Quite frankly, we need it. I mean, when we look at in this country, the number one healthcare issue is obesity. I mean, you can't change your genetics. You can't change a lot of other things. And the obesity problem has, you know, if you excuse the expression, gotten to be huge. And you know, you can't simplify it by just saying eat less and exercise more, because it really kind of puts the blame on people, and that's not right to say it's your fault that you're obese. You're not trying hard enough. You're not exercising enough. You're not eating right. And the truth of the matter is that there are many, many, many people who do everything right, and they still are really challenged, and that's why these drugs are so important. And you cannot argue with the fact that the people that go on these drugs and lose weight have less heart disease, less diabetes. I mean, these are not, that's not controversial. And that's what's killing people in America is heart disease and diabetes. It's not obesity. You know, obesity is the cause of these things, but ultimately what kills people is their hearts. So, you know, I say bring it on. Whatever you can do to help people get to that healthy weight goal, let's do it. But yes, keep in mind exercise and healthy eating as well. And the processed foods. I mean, that's kind of my thing is so many people, when they think they're eating healthy because they might be getting diet foods or low calorie foods, but they're processed. And we know that these processed foods are really bad for you, not just obesity, but in terms of cancer as well. So stay away from the processed stuff. If something your grandmother didn't make, don't eat it. Maybe Jell-O. I don't know where that goes in the
I'm not sure where Jell-O falls in that category.
I don't know.
And we all know that
Manischewitz
is, you know, nothing but good for you all the way around.
Nothing but good.
Dr. Lauren Stryker, you'll see her Wednesday on WGN-TV Morning News.
Wednesday, yes. Lots of good topics this week.
Okay, looking forward to that. And thank you for joining us this morning. Have a great Sunday. Thank you so much.
You too. Bye-bye.
You'll have continuing coverage. Now we know the name of the Chicago police officer that was killed early this morning.
Yes.
And I'm sure we'll be getting more details on that. And we've got the full WGN news crew covering the story to keep you posted on it this morning, right?
Yeah, we got word from Mayor Johnson's office just a few moments ago that he has met with the family and assured them they have the full support of the administration. The statement goes on to say, "Our city is grieving and our condolences go out to the entire family as well as fellow officers and the community."
Yeah, it just sends chills through the entire community when that happens. I mean, not obviously the police family and the family of the officer, but, you know, we should all feel these kind of chills when something like this happens. The officer was 30 years old.
And 2 days away from turning 31.
30 years old. Come on.
Yes. He had just gotten off duty and apparently was heading home. We don't know any really details as to how all of this transpired yet. But as we say, he was just getting off duty early this morning and perhaps looking forward certainly to his birthday, maybe having a Monday off, you know, something like that.
So we'll get details on all of that as the morning progresses. As soon as we find out about things, we certainly will let you know about them. So stick around. 10:11, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. It's my favorite Prince song. Today is a sad Prince anniversary. It was on this day in 2016 that Prince was found dead at his home, 57 years old. Just a baby, Schwanee, 57 years old.
I would say so, yes. I remember telling some people, was in a local hangout in the neighborhood when that news came down, and some of the younger people working there, they just absolutely stopped doing what they were doing.
Yeah, it was, it was shocking news. I remember.
It really was.
I was on the air. I was.
Oh, you were?
I was literally on the air with Bill and Wendy in the afternoon. I used to, you know, do like a once a week movie review thing.
Yeah, sure.
With them,
like, yeah, like yeah, I remember. Yeah,
like I do with Bob Surratt. And while I'm doing it on my computer in front of me, these bulletins started to come through from TMZ that you know, Prince had died. Blah blah blah. You know, and I like to get a little more confirmation than just one source, you know, before I report something.
Of course, yeah.
But it turns out that TMZ was 100% correct. They were the first ones to report this, as they were. I was also on the air when Michael Jackson died, and TMZ was the first to report that. So, you know, a lot of times they are, you know, people say, oh, it's a gossip site, you know, no credibility. But they, you know, often they have these things first, and they have them right, and that's that's where I was.
And you know, I remember also TMZ being one of the first to report Kobe Bryant being killed.
That's right.
Yep. So they've been consistent.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. So, but it's hard to believe that it's 8 years ago.
I know
That Prince has been gone for 8 years, and that he was only 57 years old.
And it's been over 10 years now since Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. So, you know, people ask, Dean, we love the Sunday show. Thank you. We get so many texts, people that enjoy our silliness here on Sunday morning. We appreciate it very much. But how can we get even more?
How Wait, can, there's more?
How can we get even more? All right. No one has actually said that. But... But it's a way for me to lead into this next thing that I've got a couple of appearances coming up where, you know, I would love to see you. I'm going to be hosting this evening with Phil Rosenthal at the Chicago Theater, which is going to be May the 4th, Saturday, May the 4th. It's an evening with Phil Rosenthal from Somebody Feed Phil, his very popular Netflix show, where he's going to talk about the places where he's been. We're going to talk food. I'm going to, you know, kind of host a Q&A. So if you would like to get tickets for that, you can go to livenation.com and get tickets. Chicago Theater box office, you know, all the usual places. But also we've got another one of our Dean's Night Out coming up as well at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. And that's going to be on May the 12th. That's the new date for this now, May the 12th. We're going to go see the Carole King musical, beautiful, the Carole King musical. And not only we get a couple of tickets to the show, but we also have a little pre-show reception. And we always have a lot of fun at these things. So you can go to WGNradio.com/contests to enter for that. And LiveNation.com for Phil Rosenthal.
Highly recommend the show.
Yep.
Beautiful.
I've noticed your name in the registry, Schwani, several times.
You did notice
trying to score some free tickets to this.
I thought I had disguised it.
All you got to do is ask. You don't have to get in there.
Yeah, the old I thought I had disguised it.
The alias of Barney Fife was the kind of one that you couldn't resist.
Every fake entry that he put in is a character on the Andy Griffith Show.
Otis.
Howard Sprague is trying to come to...
Floyd Lawson. Wally.
He puts down on the entry form, first name Ant, second name B, last name B.
Was there an entry just for Wally on there also?
From the filling station.
Just said Wally. Because I don't think Wally had a last name.
I don't think so. Did Aunt B have a last name?
Taylor.
Was she Taylor?
She
also?
Was, yes, Taylor. B. She Taylor. Was, she must have been Andy's father's sister.
Yeah. Okay.
Was there an entry for Mr. Foley from the grocery store?
Wow. Who was the mean guy?
Oh, that was Ben Weaver, who ran the department store.
Ben Weaver, the mean guy.
Of course.
He wasn't in there either, huh?
Yeah. So legit.
Weaver. Ben.
Legit entries only, please. We would appreciate. The new Taylor Swift album came out on Friday morning. How many times have you listened to the album so far, Shwani?
None, but I've been impressed by the fact that it's also on vinyl.
She's putting it out on as many
formats as
possible. Yeah.
I didn't see an 8-track, though.
It still could come.
Yeah, okay.
She's a marketing genius.
Yeah,
I'm hoping for cassette, and I'm hoping for cassette and 8-track. That would be nice. Isn't it amazing, though, how... it instantly becomes number one. It instantly becomes the talk of everything. Her fan base is just absolutely amazing. And I think it's because of the music. And I think it's because parents don't mind if their kids kind of emulate her because she's such a good role model.
Yeah, right.
You know, she's all things wholesome and all things nice and, you know, like that. So I don't think... parents mind paying extra money for the albums and the concerts, and I would be willing to bet that there are going to be 2 or 3 different versions of this album that'll come out, so the super fans will buy each and every version that you know, that comes out.
Where did they get the name? How did they come up with the name for this?
The name of the album?
The name of the album, yeah.
Tortured Poets?
Yeah.
Something?
Yeah, where did they get that?
I don't know. I'll ask her.
Okay. I would imagine you'll be able to interview her sooner or later.
Nah, so far, not. So far, she doesn't need pipsqueaks like me. Doing pretty well all on her own without talking to old Uncle.
You know, albums going to number one instantaneously does harken back to our ute.
To the Beatles.
The Beatles and the Rolling Stones, yes.
Yeah.
You'll notice I say the Rolling Stones, not just the Stones.
What does that mean?
That just means I'm being formal about it, with respect. You didn't hear that back in the 60s, what they said. They didn't call them just the Stones. It was the Rolling Stones.
I think we did just call them the Stones.
No, maybe.
We were a lot goofier than you were. You Indiana people are always a lot more polite than we were.
Well,
was there anybody like that? I was trying to think back, you know, when I was a ute, or, you know, really with anybody. Was there somebody on the music scene that was your Taylor Swift?
Hmm. Elvis would have been a little before
for
us.
For a lot
I
of
think.
People. But,
yeah.
Right, for a lot of people, Elvis still is.
Mm-hmm.
The complete pinnacle. You go to Graceland Mansion and... You see people who are, you know, have been lifelong devotees of the king of rock and roll. But I was just trying to think, you know, I didn't like anybody that much.
Yeah, I liked a lot of different groups and bands and artists, but I never really had one that I completely gravitated towards.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I mean, I liked the Beatles a lot, but...
Well, really, by the time I was in high school, it was Chicago for me.
The group Chicago?
Yeah. And then in college, it was Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Huh.
You know,
were they your favorites?
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. See, my formative years were spent in the greatest musical decade of all time, the 1980s.
Mm.
You got Billy Joel, you got Huey Lewis, you had the Commodores and Lionel Richie, you had Michael Jackson, Madonna. Bruce Springsteen.
I guess Michael Jackson might have been one of mine.
Yeah.
I guess.
As a solo artist.
I can't really think because... didn't you find this to be the case? Because you were both DJs also.
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing music on the radio, doesn't it kind of ruin your musical tastes a little bit?
That can happen.
Because you're playing the songs over and over and over and over.
You get tired of them.
Or you get sick of them.
Yeah. Luckily for me, I was a DJ, you know, years after my musical tastes were kind of developed in the 80s. I mean, I was a DJ in the 90s, and so a lot of that stuff I didn't like anyway. But you're right. I mean, it was the power rotations that we had there, the A's that we had, were every hour and 26 minutes.
Yep. Yeah,
you're playing the same song?
Same with us.
Yeah.
Every 90, well, you know, when I first started, it was right smack in the middle of Saturday Night Fever.
Ah, okay.
So
Bee Gees all the time.
Every 90 minutes.
Bee Gees, Samantha Sang, Andy Gibb, you know, that whole thing. Every 90 minutes, the same songs were coming up over and over and over again.
And see, luckily in our studio, we could turn the volume all the way down. There was a little red light that came on a tone when there was 20 seconds left to go on your song.
Right. So you blink on and off.
You could turn it off. Yeah. You didn't have to listen to it. I mean, if I had to hear Ice Ice Baby one more time, I was going to hurt somebody.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
You guys had all that fancy stuff. We just had two turntables and a mono Gates board.
I'll never forget the first time.
With an analog VU meter right in the center of the board.
First time we had a CD player, it was Celebration Time in the studio.
Oh, that would have been.
Yeah, that was highfalutin.
Big time.
The day that we went from tape cartridges to CDs.
Did you have the feature on the CD player where you could cue it up?
Yeah, you could cue it up.
Just, you know, toggle back and forth on it.
The PD thought he was really clever because there was a way you could put a code on the top of it where it would only play the certain track that he wanted it played. So I did the night show, and what I did was I pilfered one that didn't have one. And I would pop the lids, and I would put the song, I would put the CD into the quote-unquote Renegade case, and I'd play different versions of songs. Wow. Just to see if he was listening.
And you got away with it?
One time he was listening and told me to knock it off.
And then called you, yeah.
You're listening to our Inside the Dork World of Radio DJs.
I was a rebel, what can I tell you?
Even my eyes went back into my head.
I was waiting to hear a sigh of frustration.
What you're talking about? Yeah,
that's the sad part.
Grateful Dead. Somebody says on our text line with
The Grateful Dead.
Yeah, the Deadheads. That's kind of a Taylor Swift level fandom.
A lot of following.
Where they traveled all over the country, and not only that, the Grateful Dead allowed the fans with any kind of recording equipment to just tap in the system, go right ahead, record.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. So I guess the anomaly, I mean, Beyonce is, you know, certainly a similar popularity to Taylor Swift. Although if you look at the numbers, the record sales and concert sales and all that, Taylor Swift is technically above, but Beyonce is way, way, way up there as well.
Yeah.
But, from back in the day, it's Grateful Dead. Who would be, from the 90s? Is there one from the 90s?
Prince would be.
Yeah, Prince is probably up there.
And Nirvana?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know if they have the same kind of following as Taylor Swift. You know, the same kind of...
Didn't Kurt Cobain and Nirvana have that type of dedication among the fandom?
I mean, they certainly were popular.
Yeah.
I think that there's a certain level of popularity, and then, you know, it's like Taylor Swift, the Beatles.
I know a lot of people followed Dave Matthews' Band around a lot, too.
Yeah, yeah.
From the 90s.
I was with them till they threw garbage in the river.
I was going to say, exactly. Until they...
they've been dead.
There was an accident over the river.
Yep.
Yeah.
On the bridge.
All right, let's talk about some more inside radio stuff that nobody else will understand. All right, and coming up on WGN-TV this week on our morning news, I will be talking with Zendaya about her brand new movie, Challengers. It's a tennis movie, a very interesting tennis movie. I'll tell you much more about it, and Zendaya will tell you much more about it. Coming up, I think that's Tuesday that we've got. Also on Friday this week on WGN-TV morning news, our pal David Desmalchian, who is one of the most prolific actors. He's was in Oppenheimer. He's been in some of the biggest movies that have come out over the past 10 years or so. But he also loves doing these little quirky, usually horror movies. He's starring in one right now, and he will join us to talk about that. Wednesday, I'm going to be cooking on the TV morning show, and we're going to be getting ready for Passover, which begins at sundown tomorrow. And I've got some Passover treats that we'll be featuring and that I'll be doing my best with. So we've got a lot of good stuff coming up this week on television. And here on the show this morning, we have some pretty good A-listers. The man formerly known as George Costanza from the Seinfeld television series, actor Jason Alexander will be joining us on the show later to talk about his new play that will be world premiering at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. It's not a Shakespearean production,
They're just world premiering it there on the Navy Pier site. And it's called Judgment Day. It's a comedy about sort of an unscrupulous lawyer who is arguing for his right to get into heaven. It's an interesting concept. I haven't seen it yet. I don't know anything about it yet. But Jason will join us later on to talk about that. And coming up in our next half hour, we're going to be talking with another big-time A-lister, Eddie Izzard, who is, you know, you may know best from stand-up comedy, but he is very much a presence on the dramatic stage as well. He is also at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater now, and he is doing something Shakespearean. He's doing a one-person Hamlet production in which he plays 23 different roles in this production. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard, because it was in New York, it was like triple extended in New York, that it is quite the production. But we had an opportunity to visit with Eddie this week, and we'll share that with you all coming right up in a minute. Eddie Izzard on stage doing a one-person Hamlet in which he takes on 23 different roles in this show. She did this show on Broadway. It was extended three times. She's going to spend some time here in Chicago doing her Hamlet and then take it to the West End of England. We'll talk with Eddie Izzard coming up in just a minute. But there is another production I want to vert your attention to right now. One of the classic songs from Meredith Willson's The Music Man. You know, you think 76 trombones and some of the big production numbers, but this one is the one that touches your heart in the show, Till There Was You, that the character Marion sings in the show. The Music Man is back up and running again at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire. It'll be there until June the 2nd, and starring as Marion in the show is Alexandra Silber, who joins us on the phone. Alexandra, thank you for joining us. Before you,
thank you for having me.
You got a busy day out there with performances, so I appreciate you taking some time to be with us on the show today. It's got to be fun.
It's truly my pleasure.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. It's got to be a lot of fun for you to take on this classic role, right? It's so, you know, it's such a classic part of American theater.
Absolutely. It's such an honor. I feel like I'm joining a club of women who've gotten to tell this story, but it's really wonderful to be able to see it in a new way and really try and carve out my own stamp on Marion Peru and, of course, sing these beautiful songs and fall in love every day.
Yeah, you are definitely no stranger to the Chicago theater scene, right? I mean, you've been in lots of different productions here.
It's absolutely. I love this community. And in fact, when I was in A Midsummer Night's Dream 5 years ago at Chicago Shakespeare, not only played the Queen of the Fairies, but met my husband. So I owe Chicago not only a wonderful artistic time, but really, you know, made my entire marital life possible.
Another romance at beautiful Navy Pier, isn't that nice?
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
That's fun. Talk to me a little about this production now. Music Man is a 6-time Tony Award-winning musical, and there have been different twists on it. I saw it on Broadway, I don't know, maybe a year or two ago, something like that, with Hugh Jackman and Foster Sutton. Every production takes a slightly different spin. Tell us a little about yours.
Absolutely. So our director choreographer, Katie Spellman, who is a Chicago native herself, has really tried to focus on the miracle sort of a town that has experienced a lot of loss, that a big plague has come through the town, not at all unlike America and the world post-COVID experienced a lot of losses, and in a lot of ways is sort of spiritually dead. And when Harold Hill comes to town, even though he's a charlatan, he somehow brings color and hope and magic to the town and really brings it back to life. And of course, Marion the librarian was a very literal life, a very fact-based life, but he somehow really transforms her younger brother, who's very grief-stricken at the loss of their father. And she can't help but admit that he's in touch with something that she simply doesn't understand, and they come to see each other in this beautiful new way. I think another thing that's really special about Katie's perspective, too, is that oftentimes these characters are very young, and she's really wanting to see what happens if we look at these two people in their 30s, who in 1912 would really be way past spinsterhood.
Right.
And so it's really special to be able to tell the story in a very unique and very truthful way.
Yeah, and who is your Harold Hill in this production?
Oh, the wonderful K.J. Hippensteel, who has also been on the Marriott stage before in Something Rotten in 2019. He's a wonderful leader, a wonderful man, and a wonderful leading man. A sensitive, very vulnerable Harold Hill, but also has incredible charisma. Reminds me a little bit of Dick Van Dyke in his likability. Wonderful dancer and singer, but a truly tremendous actor, too.
Yeah. Is it particularly challenging doing any show, this show in particular, because there's so many moving parts in the round like you're doing at the Marriott Lincolnshire?
Oh, yes. Doing a show in the round is an extraordinary challenge, but also a great privilege, because you really feel that even though there, of course, is theatricality, you get to almost live incredibly realistically. You know, when you're thinking about just operating in the world, one doesn't really think about where the audience is. You just live your life, you know?
Yeah.
And that is definitely something that's true at the Marriott. And also, another thing that's such a gift of the Marriott is that when you're in the round, your audience is very close to you, sometimes less than a foot away. So there's an intimacy and an inclusion of the audience in the experience that doesn't feel as distant as it does in the proscenium.
Yeah, I often wondered how distracting that must be. I've seen countless shows in the round and at the Marriott Lincolnshire, and I wondered if, you know, my singing along is distracting the actors, or, you know, if, you know, because you see people all around you who are singing, reacting. There's the guy sleeping in row two over there.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
And I wonder go ahead.
I will say that one of the things that's very interesting post-streaming television and post-COVID is I do think some people have forgotten how to attend the theater, and that it is distinct from being at home singing along to a movie on Netflix, if you will. Everybody, it's a privilege to be in the same company as the people that are performing for you. And just remember that even though we might not be paying direct attention to you, we are there, we can hear you,
right,
and
right.
While we welcome your presence and your attention, your participation is not required at this time.
Yeah.
So but at the same time, you can't fault people for their enthusiasm and their passion. But I do think there's going to be a little bit of a period of all of us adjusting to going back into live spaces.
Yeah, it's always so interesting to me, and particularly in the round, where I would think that performers would feed off of enthusiastic responses from the audience, but at the same time, the guy that's on his cell phone while you're doing Till There Was You, or
yeah,
eating some candy, or singing along, whatever, with it, they can see you, ladies and gentlemen, when you're in the audience.
Yes, they can see you. You know what I would say to that is, without sounding grouchy about it, I will just say that I think this is true in theater or in life. The greatest gift you can give another human being is our unfiltered regard, right? That if you can truly be present and pay attention to someone undistracted, you're giving the ultimate gift to another human being. And if you as an audience can offer that to the actors on stage, it's, you know, you are our final scene partner, dear audience. You are, we cannot do it without you.
Yeah.
And to have your, unadulterated attention means the world to us.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that, because it's definitely a pet peeve of mine as an audience member when there are a million distractions that are going on, and I want to concentrate on what's going on the stage. And
right.
Not on who you're texting at that very moment. That whatever was so important that it couldn't wait till intermission to do that. The Music Man is at the Marriott Lincolnshire. It's now through June the 2nd. And as always, you can get more info when you go to marriotttheater.com. You call 847-634-0200. So of all of the great songs, Alexandra, that you have to sing in the show, is Marion the Librarian. Do you have, are there certain favorites of yours?
Yes, I have to say it's a little bit of a surprise. So, you know, in The Music Man, there's a very famous barbershop quartet that was originally performed by the Buffalo Bills. We have an amazing quartet, all local performers. And there is a quintet where I sing a song called Dream of Now, Dream of Then, and they sing Light a Rose, and we sing it together. And though I love a solo moment as much as the next soprano, it really is such a beautiful example of theater as a team sport.
Yeah.
And the song itself is also very touching, almost erotic in her yearning to bust out of herself. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful onstage moment that is a real joy.
There are so many amazing musical moments in the show. As I said, from 76 Trombones, which is sort of the signature song of the show, to, you know, Till There Was You. And this other one that we've got a clip of, Good Night, My Someone, Good Night, which is just one of the most beautiful songs. And wait until you hear Alexandra sing it. Alexandra Silber have two great shows today. Break a Leg Twice today. And
thank you so very much.
I really appreciate you joining us. Very much so. Thank you for joining us. Have a great Sunday. What a voice. Alexandra Silber, Marion the Librarian from the Meredith Wilson's Music Man. Out at the Marriott Lincolnshire now until June the 2nd. Stand-up comedy of Eddie Izzard, that's really where he cut his teeth, made a name for himself worldwide with nominations for Tony Awards and Emmy Awards. And these days she is on stage at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater doing a one-person Hamlet show. A very interesting concept. I mean, Hamlet is a very intricate show with an entire cast, but when it's done with just one performer doing all 23 roles, that is really something remarkable. And that's what Eddie Izzard is doing now through May the 4th at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. She visited with me on our WGN-TV Morning News this week, and explain more. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Great to be asked to come in. I'm excited to bring Hamlet in.
It's such an interesting production, and your decision to do this as a one-person show fascinated me from the moment that I heard it.
The decision is, if you think about it, I have been trained in a very unusual way. If anyone knows about it, I was actually studying accounting when I was at university, and then I wanted to act when I was 7 years old. So acting was being the big love, and then I had to go through all this difficulty. Thing. I had to go to university, certain parental pressure, and then I had already said no, dramatic acting is not for me. Concentrated on comedy because I loved it, Monty Python influence. I was a street performer, I was a stand-up, but acting was always my big love. But I wasn't on the list, you know, the list of who should we build a Hamlet production around.
Right.
So I'm not on that list, so I put myself on my own list.
So you created your own little cubbyhole for that. Is it liberating to play all of the characters?
Or
is it exhausting?
It is both. It's both those.
Yeah.
It is very tough. It is I have to do honor to all the characters, so all the arcs are playing at the same time. So as you switch from one character to another, they're on a different trajectory on their arc, and then there's the whole arc, the super arc of the play. So to make that all land with Selena Cadell, my director, we worked very hard to make that work. My brother Mark Izzard, my older brother, doing the adaptation, which we already done on Great Expectations, which was a big hit a year ago, and so it's working. The New Yorkers loved it. We thought we'd bring it into Chicago just before we go off to London,
yeah,
and a little mini world tour of this, but people are really loving it, and I'm loving doing it. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, the best work I've ever done in my life, but it's working.
I've seen many productions through the years, and I'm wondering how close is your version to what good old Bill Shakespeare himself actually wrote it.
I think Shakespeare would like this. It's, if you know really the history of Shakespeare, there's a first quarter and a second quarter. First is 2 hours, second is 4 hours. I think he rewrote it and added a lot of material in. My brother has pulled it back down to 2 hours, so it's not the full four length, but then sitting down and watching 4 hours or 3.5 hours of Hamlet is tricky. So, but it is true to the word. Great pure, the beauty of the poetry is all there. There are certain things which are funny in it, but that's just because they're funny characters, yeah, and certain funny scenes, but that's it. It is the tragedy of Hamlet.
Is there a certain prestige in doing Shakespeare for an actor?
Oh, definitely. I'm severely atypically dyslexic. That's my official title of my dyslexia. So I was very intimidated by Elizabethan verse. American citizens might think, well, this is a tricky thing for us, but the Brits grab it easily. No, we struggle with
you
it
have
as well.
As much of a hard time as we do.
As much
a
hard
it,
time. Yeah. What is he talking about yeah. here? But it is, we have done an accessible version of it that is true to William Shakespeare, and kids from 9 to 90 should enjoy the drama of it, be moved by the drama of it, and occasionally laugh, because there are occasional laughs in. But when we went on sale in Chicago, it was we broke the box office records on the first day.
So. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I think people are going to be so curious to see you. And plus, I mean, you've got some Chicago history here.
Yes.
I've seen you do your stand-up many times.
From the George Theater, I think, way back.
The Royal George Theater.
Yeah,
I want to say I saw you at the Chicago Theater also.
Yes, yes, yes.
I've downtown as well.
Played many times in Chicago, and it's great to be here. You've got such a reputation. And to come into London, because normally you'd come from London and come the other way around.
Yeah, right.
I do things in a different way.
Yeah.
I'm a kind of slightly 21st century person.
Yeah.
But London's going, oh, you've been to New York and you've been to Chicago. And I thought that was a wonderful feather in our cap to do.
Yeah.
And at the Shakespeare Theatre Company, Ed Hall said, why don't you come on in? So with 3 weeks' notice, we suddenly, we're coming,
oh,
we're coming,
really?
We're coming.
That fast.
Yes,
yeah,
it's been really fast. And I like moving like
I wanted,
that.
I wanted to ask you, I believe it was 1985 in which you came out as transfluid. And you've been very open about it, seemingly very comfortable with it all. But
yeah,
now it's become a bit of a controversial hot button subject again. I wonder, is it easier for you now? Does it not make any difference? How are you?
It is way easier. I mean, if you are a right-wing politician or the people working behind the scenes of the right-wing politicians, what you want is to stir up the culture wars. You want to stir up this, oh, there's a problem here. There's people making very loud noises on the internet about it. But really, things are a lot better than they were. When I came out in 85, no one was talking about
it.
Now people are talking about it in quite a heated way, but at least they're talking about it. And the bottom line is women's rights are human rights, and trans rights are human rights. Kind of end of story. We have to make this work. But if you're further right wing, you want to set these two against each other, and that is a sad thing in this time. But trans people do exist, and I've just been out for almost 40 years now, so I'm just myself. I'm being I'm being truthful about what's in this world
right.
political lies. I'm just saying this is the truth.
This is who I am.
This is who I am since 1985, and I'm not taking up anyone else's space. I'm just saying this is me. So please let me be who I feel I am.
There is Eddie Izzard, one person Hamlet at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Now through May the 4th. So during the newscast, while I was listening to your every word in the newscast, observing and absorbing every moment that you delivered to us, I was also inspecting the cleanliness of the common areas here.
Did you find any paella left over from yesterday?
Did they have it again yesterday?
No, I don't. I wasn't here, actually, so I don't know.
Well, I got to say that
I've never seen a pan that big, though.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the size of a wagon wheel.
It was large.
It was large.
One of those giant tractors is what it
but
was.
But I don't want to be one of these guys that, you know, complain.
No, not you. Never.
When something is right, I want to bring it to the attention. And I got to say, I went on my 11 o'clock inspection of the station this morning. I'm like a watchman that goes
making your rounds.
And I went with the white.
So that explains that big lantern that I saw swinging back and forth.
Okay. About 11 o'clock, I walked through the halls of WGN, the darkened halls of WGN, with my white gloves on. And I check the cleanliness of all of the areas. And I can report to you that WGN is spotless.
It's immaculate.
It's immaculate.
Did you have your hazmat suit today?
No, I didn't need it.
Oh, you didn't need it.
Okay. No, I just had my white gloves. And let me just tell you something. You are listening to a radio station that you could eat off of today. So there.
Well, wonderful. Wonderful. I'm glad we passed inspection today.
Yeah. Sometimes it takes episode like that to make things
right. I know.
Right.
Yes.
Now that I think of it, I did not come in the newsroom because you were doing your newscast. I may need the hazmat suit for in there.
You were in here already today.
Yeah, it wasn't really an inspection mode, though.
No, you just kind of looked in and walked out.
I just came in for a visit this morning, and your boss was there, so I felt like I couldn't goof around that much.
Oh, no. That's all right. Look, you can come in. You know you're welcome anytime. Mm-hmm. I'm always delighted to see you.
Jeez.
Sounds very sincere.
Andy, have you seen my galoshes anywhere?
Yeah. Coming up on the program this morning, the character formerly known as George Costanza, Jason Alexander, in rehearsal right now over at Chicago Shakespeare Theater for a world premiere comedy that'll be opening this week. We'll tell you more about that coming up later on. Got our food time show after 12 o'clock today. We're going to be talking about some Passover treats today. Is that correct? You could say happy Passover early.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's okay to say that?
Yeah.
All right. Happy Passover. And, so we're going to be on TV this week. I'm going to be making a nice brisket and some potato kugel.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of traditional, right?
Oh, yeah. Brisket, for sure.
Yeah.
Kugel, for sure.
But there are things that are served at the Seder table, which mm-hmm. are very traditional, like bitter herbs, right?
Right. The apple and the nuts and I can't remember what it's called horosis, but I can't remember what's
actually in it.
In it, but it's tremendous. You put it on matzah and it makes the matzah taste a little better.
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise matzah tastes like
it's pretty bland. Yeah.
Drywall.
Yeah. It's like eating cardboard.
Not that, I made some matzah last year. I laid the matzah sheets out in mm-hmm. a sheet pan, and then I melted chocolate and poured it all over the matzah.
Ooh, yeah.
And then, did I put nuts on it? I can't remember if I did, but the melted chocolate on the matzah, and that was spectacular.
Yeah, there's matzah crack, and that's kind of what that is.
I've heard it called that, yeah. I've heard that. Some people also put, caramel.
Mm-hmm.
On
toffee,
yeah, kind of. So it's that's one way to make your matzah absolutely delicious.
That is correct.
Shwani, what's your favorite way to have matzah?
Boy, I'm not sure.
You like a nice matzah bologna sandwich, don't you?
Yeah, I like. There's very few foods that I don't like. So, but. In the fact that we're talking about food and that you're cooking, you're making a brisket,
yep.
potato kugel,
yep.
and listening to this and talking about all of the excellent things you do.
Is it making you hungry?
It is making me hungry. And then it dawned on me, we're never invited.
Well, that's true. When you're right.
I'm just saying.
When you're right, you're right.
I'm just saying, we're never invited.
Well,
never included.
I don't never cook here. Where am I supposed to cook here?
Yeah, really.
It's not like I have a giant paella pan and I can whip something up for you.
You just wheel it in.
But it's not like we're unable to come up to West Bradley Place where you're making these delicious meals.
Come on Wednesday.
All right.
Everyone else in the building does. Come on.
Yes. You made a comment sometimes that people come in there and you don't even know
where. I'm pretty sure
the
people that work at the McDonald's next door come over on Wednesday when I'm cooking. There are people I don't recognize. I'm going to start checking IDs.
Well, I just wanted to make a statement.
You're more than welcome. You are more than welcome. And really, if I was a better friend, I could bring some stuff up here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like leftovers.
I know. Yes. Andy, have you ever been invited?
No, but I know that the invitation is there. Yeah. It's just kind of implied.
Have you not been there at TV on days when I'm cooking?
No, sir.
I am trying to remember if
you're
I have.
I know you're not. Andy's there.
I probably have. I'm just so engrossed with, you know, trying to do a good job in sports. I don't make my way back to the studio until it's time.
Right. Well, you know, you're both more than welcome to come at any Wednesday.
Sounds like a plan.
If security will let you in.
Can I have this in writing?
I have an ID to get in there.
I did leave a picture of Schwani by the door with a red line through.
Do not admit.
Under any circumstances. Well, I'm doing the brisket in, I know like everyone's got their own special way of doing it and, you know, traditional ways. I'm doing mine for simplicity and deliciousness.
There you go.
And it's going to be, I'm making it in a slow cooker. I'm actually going to make it the day before because it takes like 15 hours to cook it in the slow cooker.
Slow and low.
Slow and low is how you do a brisket.
Yep.
And it's it melts in your mouth. And this potato kugel thing that I'm doing is I'm going to do that in the oven. And I'll be able to do all that right on the TV set. So it's going to be Wednesday. We'll get into all of that. Speaking of George Costanza, a very interesting survey, I guess you might say, came out this week that from Google of which characters, sitcom characters, are the most popular of all time.
Hmm.
And Chandler Bing came out. These are characters who have been searched most often.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's not like a personal preference thing, but which TV sitcom characters have been searched the most? And Chandler Bing from Friends came out number one. Now, this was over the past year, so it may have been because of the death of Matthew Perry that happened. But I thought that was interesting. Sheldon Cooper came in second from The Big Bang Theory. Ron Swanson from Parks and Recreation after that. What?
It's funny now. That's a good character.
The Ron Swanson?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny how he's become so popular. Yeah. You're right. Michael Scott from The Office is number four, and Joey Tribbiani from Friends came in the number five spot. George Costanza, who we're going to hear from in a few minutes, Jason Alexander, number nine on the list.
Hmm.
Yeah. Along with Jim Halpert from The Office, Dwight Schrute from The Office, Al Bundy. Very interestingly, very few women in this top 20. There's maybe Monica Geller is on the list. Let me see if I can quickly find some other. Phoebe Buffay from Friends.
Rachel Green.
No Rachel Green, interestingly. Yeah, no Rachel Green. April Ludgate from Parks and Recreation.
What about Penny from Big Bang?
Nope.
Penny with no last name.
Penny with no last name. Pam from The Office is on the list. Gloria Pritchard from Modern Family is on it. Relatively few women. It's almost all men. But these are the most searched characters on here. Sorry, no Andy Griffith characters, Andy. Or Schwani.
I was just going to ask about that. Yeah. You were talking about female, you know, comic actresses, and no Sally Rogers there, huh?
Nope. Now, these are the most Googled.
Okay, well.
So, I mean, what are you trying to Google about Sally Rogers?
No, just what are they trying to Google about Rachel Green, you know?
Well, she's not on the list.
They aren't.
She's not on the list. That is surprising.
But I understand what you mean. Like, what are they? What are they trying to Google about Joey Tribbiani at this point? Really, but people are apparently. Apparently, you know, that's how it is. But you know, like some of the classic characters of all time from when you and I were utes.
Yeah, they're not on there.
How is Dick Van Dyke not on there?
Yeah. Mel Cooley.
Yeah, Rob Petrie. How is Rob Petrie
Rob Petrie. Yeah.
Bob Newhart.
Bob Newhart. Anybody from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not just the super old characters.
Right.
But
and, you know, you're going to have Jason Alexander on. What about Kramer?
Kramer is on the list.
Kramer is on the list?
Cosmo Kramer is number 8 on the list.
Okay.
Yeah, Cosmo is, but Jerry Seinfeld isn't.
Seinfeld is
Jerry,
not.
Jerry and Elaine are not.
Hmm.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure you can really say why on any of these things. Like, why would you ever want to Google Sheldon Cooper? I mean, he's number 2 on the list.
Yeah. I mean, there's some pretty iconic scenes with him, so perhaps they're Googling that to get to a YouTube video or something like that.
Maybe. You know, and it's, I guess, you know, because it's on the internet, it's fueled by younger people. So some of the more modern shows are the ones that are listed on here.
It does seem to be a pattern there with shows from, you know, 90s into the 2000s.
And young Sheldon is wrapping up, right? So that might be another reason.
It is. That's possible. Very possible. Yeah. All right.
Nothing from Cheers either.
Nothing. Nobody from Cheers.
Nobody from Cheers.
How is Norm from Cheers not on there?
Yeah.
Or Cliff.
Right. Cliff.
Classic. Cliff Clavin. Right. I mean, these are classic characters, in my opinion.
Alex P. Keaton.
Right. And you would think that there would be a certain amount of activity about Michael J. Fox.
Yeah.
Yes.
Given
sure.
everything that he's you know, going through and projects that he's been involved in, you'd think that a lot of these people, you know, would be mentioned in here.
Arthur Fonzarelli.
How about that?
Fonzarelli.
Yep.
Well, like you said, it's fueled by younger people.
Yeah, younger folks. Right.
That's probably where we're going here.
So. I don't have time to go to the Google machine and...
What is Google?
Hey, how do you spell Ralph Cramden? I'm not sure.
Well, a sad note that's just coming over the wires now regarding the Lyric Opera of Chicago. A note and statement from Anthony Freud, who is the general director, the president, CEO of Lyric Opera of Chicago. And also Enrique Mazzola, the musical director of Lyric Opera, announcing and sharing the news of the death of the company's musical director emeritus, Sir Andrew Davis. The renowned conductor served as Lyric's musical director and principal conductor for 2 decades with an illustrious career that spanned the globe and included leading significant orchestras on several continents. Having made his Lyric debut in 1986, Sir Andrew Davis served as the company's musical director and principal conductor from 2000 to 2021 and immensely distinguished himself at the Lyric with the variety of performances and works that he presented, leading nearly 700 performances of 62 operas by 22 different composers. So our condolences to the family of Sir Andrew Davis and friends and colleagues. Sir Andrew Davis helping to make the Lyric Opera certainly, you know, what it has become. Sad news just coming out this morning. Coming up, we will talk with Jason Alexander about his world premiere play at the Shakespeare Theater. And also, you can join me as I emcee the Night with Phil Rosenthal at the Chicago Theater on May the 4th. Phil Rosenthal, who is the host of Somebody Feed Phil, which is on Netflix, does this amazing, hilarious, informative travel and culinary show. And he will be talking about where he's been and what he's done and what he's eaten. And he is always hilarious. And I'm honored that I was invited to come and host the evening with him. So I'm looking forward to being there. I hope you can be there as well. It's going to be Saturday, May the 4th at the Chicago Theater. And tickets are available through LiveNation.com.
Who are you, George Costanza?
I'm the opposite of every guy you've ever met.
It's not you. It's me.
You're giving me the it's not you, it's me routine? I invented it's not you, it's me. Nobody tells me it's them, not me. If it's anybody, it's me.
All right. George, it's you.
You're damn right it's me.
Look, I was just trying to, you know.
I know what you were trying to do. Nobody does it better than me.
Shut your traps and stop kicking the seats! We're trying to watch the movie! And if I have to tell you again, we're going to take it outside and I'm going to show you what it's like! You understand me?
Now shut your mouths or I'll shut them for you.
And boy, I've wanted to do that a million times in theaters. George Costanza held nothing back on the Seinfeld series that ran from 1989 to 1998 and really made a household name out of actor Jason Alexander. He embraces his Seinfeld past, as you'll hear in our interview, but also is here in Chicago because he's starring in a world premiere comedy that's about to open this week at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater called Judgment Day. We sat down with Jason and also his co-star Daniel Breaker over at Navy Pier the other day and learned a lot more about the show and also a lot more about what it was like to be George Costanza. Jason, I'm shocked to hear that this is your Chicago stage debut here.
Are you shocked?
I am because I know you love theater and
I do.
Most everybody comes through and does something.
Daniel and I have probably been doing, well, I'm a little older than him, but we've probably been doing theater the same amount. But everything I did for the theater was either you're in LA or you're in New York. That was it. I really haven't been on the road. I haven't done a lot of stuff outside, you know, like regionals, good regionals or. So this is my Chicago stage debut. In fact, I used to come here to do like a commercial. So I'd fly in, spend the day, have a great dinner, and fly out. And they go, how was Chicago? I go, I don't know.
I didn't see one bit of it. I understand. What's your impression so far of the
theater? Well, we've been
having
an amazing time. Well, this play, Chicago Shakespeare, is extraordinary. Gorgeous. The experience of being on the pier and walking down through that pier and all those very happy people just to go to work is fantastic. But I've been to a little storefront theater, I think it was called the Rivendell or something like that, where a friend of mine from college was performing. Steppenwolf, we saw an extraordinary, extraordinary play at Steppenwolf. I'm going to the Chicago Improvised Shakespeare Company in a couple of days. I mean, this is just a theater town.
It's theater
And it resonates. And if he would do Hamilton one more time, just one more performance here, I would probably go.
Oh, yeah.
Just do it now. Come on.
I charge a lot.
But that's not your only Chicago background, right? I mean, you're kind of from the area. You've bounced around a little bit.
Chicago feels a little like a home away from home. Being an Army brat, my dad was stationed in Joliet for a while. We were also in the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois for a while. So coming back here just always feels like a return to something. Still got a lot of friends and family here, so it's always great coming back to Chicago. I love this town. I mean, the food alone is just like top notch in this city. So we're always doing a lot of food field trips.
Well, and when Daniel says it's top notch, this man is it fair to say you're a master chef?
Oh, okay, sure. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and he knows like master chefs everywhere we go.
Nice.
He has introduced us to more insanely good food, both of his own hand and my friends.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, I started during the pandemic because we couldn't get any guests to come on the show. And I'm a cook. I'm certainly not a master chef, but they said, you cook. Why don't you do a cooking segment on the show? And I said, well, it'll be comedy probably because I'm sure I'm going to screw it up. And it's been going for like 4 years now.
Wow.
It's like through the roof.
I should have you come on and
by all means, I would love to.
Cooking. Yeah, that would be so
fun. I'll come
fun.
On by. Yeah, I love to fish, so I could go pull something out of this big old puddle over here.
Yeah, and cook it. Yeah, and you could be the official taster, Jason.
Happily,
perfect.
Yeah, happily, that would be fantastic. So, talk to me a little about Judgment Day. Why you chose to do the world premiere here? Why you chose to do this production in particular?
Well, it's a little bit of them choosing us as well. As soon as I read it, I was introduced to it during the pandemic, did it as a Zoom reading, and even in that sort of artificial setting, it was very funny. The role I get to play is really kind of, you know, just a madcap little romp. And then Chicago Shakespeare stepped up and said, we'd like to do it. And Moritz, our director, came on. And just the pieces started to fall together where it was too interesting, too compelling to not do it. In fact, the only thing that was, I have a new grandson, and that's the only thing that I was going, how do I weigh that? And but it's just been a lovely experience. It can be a little sometimes weird building a new piece because nobody's sure, and especially a comedy where we're in the third week of rehearsals, nothing's funny to us anymore. But
way to sell the show.
Yeah, right. It started very funny. I remember we were laughing.
Yeah, not so much anymore.
But just the feeling in the room, the collaboration in the room, they've assembled, starting with this gentleman, just a wonderful group of people and extraordinary actors, and it's been joyful to be in your town, in this theater, and on this project.
Tell me about your character.
Sammy? Once again, I play an utterly charming human being. Sammy is a very unscrupulous, amoral lawyer, a guy who's completely consumed with himself, who I give nothing away by saying he has a near-death experience that changes him, and he realizes that he has very little time left to try and do good things, not necessarily become a good person, but do enough good things. So imagine a horrible person trying to figure out how to do good things, and he begins that journey by visiting the neighborhood priest, who very quickly assesses, I should have nothing to do with this man, but can't help himself. And it's just, it's the journey that they both take, and how they're influenced by each other.
Yeah, and Daniel, you are said priest?
Yes, I am. I play Father Michael, who is the antithesis of this jerk over here, who also has maybe a bit of a question of faith, but we sort of find that as it develops. But the play is so interesting because this part of it is a touch of a buddy comedy, and as you put this odd couple together and watch them go at each other, it's a lot of fun.
It is indeed.
Jason, for you, it seems like you're gravitating to more stage projects now. Is that correct?
I guess so. To me, it's just like going back to what I had in my head in the first place. I grew up in New Jersey. When I discovered theater, it was all about New York. And my fantasies as a kid were all about, can I get over the river and start working in that town? And then I was lucky enough during the 80s to do exactly that. I had no aspirations about film or television. I just thought, well, it'd be great to make a living in the theater. And then that lovely left turn happened and all this nice stuff began. But I'm thrilled to be back, you know, kind of. The theater's the only thing I trained in. I don't know anything else about it. Yeah. I've directed movies. I'm going, I don't know what lens you should put on this thing. We use lenses? Is that what we use here? Okay.
What is this word you say, lens?
Yeah, I don't know why those movies weren't successful.
But just take the lens cap off.
Yeah, just take that off. I know that. Yeah. But yeah, it just feels like a return to what I had started to do in the first place. And it feels very fortunate. They've got me working on, you know, on both sides of the table. I get to direct a little. And everything.
Yeah.
And
which do you like better? Because you've had tremendous success, especially lately.
Oh, thanks. It depends on the piece. I find that it's not rocket science. It's directors collaborate with many, many, many more people in a sort of engaged way. I find that really interesting. Oftentimes when people offer me stuff as an actor, it's not the most compelling thing in the world. And so generally the directing opportunities buzz a little more, but you know, and then you get a piece like this where that is, you know, I I'm very happy to give that hat to Moritz and try and figure out how to do this part.
Yeah, what's the plan for this production? Is it Broadway bound? Do we know?
I mean, if it's good, let's hope we can continue going on somewhere in the world.
Is that the hope that?
I mean, right now it's like you know.
You know,
we already know it's not funny. You already told us.
Yeah, no, it's a drag.
Yeah.
You know, I guess everybody still has that fantasy of can we get it to New York? Would it work in New York? Because not only is that, I guess, our national mecca for at least commercial theater, but stuff that is played on the New York stage then tends to have a nice life going back out into the world. Is it? But I who knows? We this has yet to be in front of an audience.
No.
So one of the wonderful things about Chicago is this is such a great theater town, and the people go to the theater, and they really I think they feel. I mean, you know this more than I do. I think they feel like they are a part of teaching new plays and new productions what they've got and where they need to do their work.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the Chicago audiences have such a hunger for theater and an appreciation for the wide range, the diversity of theater. I think that's such a thrill to see that. You know, I still think that these are some of the most diverse audiences I've seen in spaces in my time coming here, and that's very comforting to know that there are people that are willing to see a Shakespeare, a comedy, a drama, something they've never seen before, a one-man show, or whatever, that they love live arts. It's still a very magical and powerful art form, and it thrives here in the Midwest.
I can't tell you the number of actors, producers, directors who want to bring their shows to Chicago for those very reasons. Because they get such valuable feedback from audiences. I was telling you before we started recording that Mel Brooks is
right,
the first name that comes to my mind because he said he would absolutely never open a show unless he brought it to Chicago first for what he gets, the feedback that he gets from the audiences. And I've seen him during the pre-Broadway run of The Producers. I went to see it more times, really, than a grown man should have, because it's such a fantastic show, as you well know, being in it for such a long time.
Been through it a few times.
Yeah. Watching him, you know, taking notes and changing and just looking around at reaction.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what you all, that's the stage that you all will be in once this opens and getting feedback, right, from
the audience?
Yeah,
Chicago will tell us. It will tell us what this show's really about. You know, we all think we know, but it's for a really funny comedy, and I promise you, it's a really funny comedy, but it's also about some things. And Chicago, I think, will tell us how rich it is or if it needs a reshaping. I always think about one of the biggest phenomena in commercial theater right now is Wicked. This town told Wicked where it needed to go. You know, it was not working here. And they really heard the Chicago audience, and they went literally back to the drawing board, went back into rehearsal, and produced the show that they have today. So, you know, I'm not suggesting that our play needs to do that. I think we're very close to our full flavor bouquet. But it will be... It's a great learning experience when you introduce a new piece to an audience, and that audience is smart, good things happen.
Now, is this the longest period of time that somebody has talked to you and not brought up Seinfeld? These,
You're 10 close.
Minutes. Yeah.
You blew it. You just blew it.
I just blew it.
Another
it
30
up.
Seconds you would have had.
Sorry, I can't even.
What's Seinfeld?
Well, he's a very successful comic. I'll introduce you to him.
Yeah.
I know him.
Is there a day that goes by where people aren't quoting back to you George Costanza-isms, episodes of the show? Because I watched the children's party episode the other day, just happened to be on, and I've seen it a million times, crying, laughing.
Yeah. You know, the clown is Jon Favreau.
Jon Favreau. I recognized his voice. Yeah, and looked it up. Yeah.
People do tend to bring... I tend to remind them of it.
Yeah.
They...
Is that good? I mean, I've known actors that embrace the character for which they are best known, and others that just want to distance themselves and put it in the past. Put it like, respect it, but yeah. It's something that I used to do.
So these guys know, I won't tell you the whole story, but I will tell you that most of the people that come up to me, the show has been more than just something they watched. It for many of them who care to approach me, they want to tell me that they were going through something difficult in their lives and that the show was incredibly helpful to them to retain their sense of humor or just whatever. It kept them afloat and was part of their process of getting back on their feet. To be part of anything that was so successful for us, you know, that actually seems to have served people, moved people, touched people, lightened them. You can't get upset about that. I mean, this is a kind of a selfish profession. I don't know about Dan. I do it because they pay me and it's fun and I meet nice people, but I never thought of it as the giving tree. I never thought of it as serving the community around me. And something like Seinfeld has taught me that sometimes it does more than just make people giggle.
Yeah. There's been so much talk over the past week or so about the Curb Your Enthusiasm finale being so similar to your finale, the Seinfeld finale. Did you see it?
I mean, I've not seen the finale yet.
Oh, wow.
I've been a little busy.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But everybody's watch it now. Everybody's told me about it.
Yeah, you've heard. I mean, are you surprised that they kind of went back?
No, only that Larry is so damn clever. He's so smart. And I'm one of the few people that like the Seinfeld finale. I can't judge it artistically, but for a show where we as a group were not terribly sentimental with each other, he found an organic way to bring back all the actors that had really been impactful and helped build our success. And so we got to share the wrap party with all of them, and I thought that that was just a gorgeous thing to do. And so I was always a fan of our finale.
Yeah, and he, I'm sure everyone's told you, but then that's kind of what he did with his own finale.
It worked once. We'll do it again.
Let's do it again. Jason Alexander, his world premiere comedy, Judgment Day, will open April 23rd and run only until May 26th at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, The Yard at Chicago Shakespeare Theater. You can get ticket info at chicagoshakes.com. So coming up, we're going to get into our Food Time segment. Today, we're going to look at some Passover treats. Passover begins at sundown tomorrow. There are traditional foods that, there's only one way to prepare them for your Seder tables. But there are lots of things that were prepared for the Passover period where you have a little more flexibility. Some traditional, some not so traditional. I want to open up the phone lines and get some of your recipe ideas for that, because I'm going to be cooking on Wednesday on television, and I wanted to do some Passover recipes. I've got a brisket recipe that I think is pretty good and pretty simple in the slow cooker, the crock pot, as we used to call it back in the day, and also a potato kugel recipe, kind of a potato onion casserole that also is super, super easy. But I've been getting recipes all morning from people here on our text line, and I love to continue to get yours. So did you get out on your grill the other day?
No, you know what? I never did. I never did. I didn't. I ended up not getting that done, unfortunately. As nice as it was, and I had a very important appointment, next day, and that, took a lot of time. So
there's nothing more important than grilling food.
I know. I should have done it, but you didn't invite me over.
Again, very true.
Excuse me, recurring theme here.
Yeah, very true.
So, yeah, I imagine you did.
Do you grill, Andy, at all?
We don't have one right now. Yeah, we.
What?
Yeah, when we moved, we didn't bring one with us.
Oh, that's no excuse.
It's all right. We're good.
We have to fix that.
We do.
Yeah, we do. It'd be nice. I like grilling. I do like it. I enjoy it.
You'd enjoy some roasted broccoli on the grill, I know.
Not if it was dipped in chocolate sauce.
Sandy's least favorite food, as we learned today.
Well, he likes Brussels sprouts now.
Well, that's one small step for man and one Brussels sprout leap for mankind.
You know, you were talking to Jason Alexander. I can only go back to a nice Seinfeld episode featuring Newman, where he called it a quote-unquote vile weed. I couldn't agree more.
Newman.
I did some salmon on the grill the other day.
Oh,
it's delicious.
Lovely.
And I did the salmon piccata. Salmon piccata.
Oh, you did the salmon piccata?
Lemon, garlic. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
And I found some really nice asparagus, nice thick. I like the nice thick asparagus.
The thick ones, yeah, sure. Sure.
On the grill. I did those on the grill with some balsamic vinegar and olive oil.
Mm-mm.
That's yummy eating.
Right. Do you put pepper on them, too? I've done it with pepper. That helps.
I didn't.
A little salt and some pepper.
Yeah, I didn't, but you certainly could. Wouldn't hurt it at all.
See? Now, see, if you invited me over, I could help you with this.
Yeah, that seems like too big of a price to pay. Trying to decide if I'm going to do any grilling today at all. I'd be too chilly today. I think I might be
a little too chilly, maybe a little bit windy.
Might be too lazy. Yeah.
Well, you already did the salmon. If you did grill today, what would you be grilling?
I want to do some pork shish kebab.
Oh, okay.
Pork tenderloin, mushroom, onion, cherry tomatoes on a skewer.
Very good.
Lemon. I would probably marinate the pork in like some lemon and olive oil. Salt, pepper, oregano, and put it on the skewer. Grill it all up. Yum, yum time for Uncle Dean.
Andy, I know how you are with certain vegetables and so
good.
What about tomatoes?
Good.
Tomatoes, if they're mashed up and put over spaghetti, they're great.
Oh, okay.
You won't eat raw tomatoes?
No, not a big
deal. Don't care for them?
I was trying to explain to you earlier today. It's a texture thing and a smell thing to me.
Hmm.
I have an over-exaggerated, I think, sense of smell. And if it does not smell good to me, get it away from me.
You're like a poodle.
Yeah, maybe I am. I don't shed either.
you're a hypoallergenic poodle. Now, see, the smell of a tomato, that would entice me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's more a textural thing than a smelling thing.
Mm. Yeah. Sliced tomatoes in a salad or the cherry tomatoes. In a salad,
so sweet.
Fresh, mixed up with romaine lettuce.
Those cherry tomatoes are so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So delicious. But, you know, I've said a million times, there's nothing like going out in the yard, picking a tomato off the vine, cucumber, green pepper, make yourself a little salad.
That's right.
All fresh. Holy smokes, that's delicious.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But I get it. I get it. I get the textural thing.
Yeah.
I wish I was afflicted with that. All textures are welcome for me.
Those cherry tomatoes are good as a snack. You know, you can just eat several of them.
Just pop them in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I was first introduced to this in Italy, an appetizer where you take a cherry tomato on a toothpick, cherry tomato, piece of basil, and another cherry, and then a little mozzarella ball. Sprinkle it with some olive oil. It's like a little mini caprese salad.
Hmm.
And I went to a bar in, where was it, Portofino. And instead of, you know, sometimes they'll bring out some peanuts or, you know, something to munch on while you're sitting there having a drink. They brought out these little mini caprese salads. I've served them ever since then. They're a hit at every party that I've ever done that I haven't invited you to, Shwani.
Now that I'm getting this impression that you don't want to invite me, why?
I just forget, that's all. I want to, I just forget.
You do the battle.
You want to, but you just forget.
I meant to.
Well, you know, my intentions were good.
I meant to, and then I was like, let me see, how many chairs do I have at the table?
Oh, I don't have enough.
Oh, I don't have enough chairs. Somebody's got to go off the list.
Let's see, who could that be?
My. All right.
You were pushing for an invitation today, though.
Apparently he's got no food in his house.
Now I feel a little
guilty. No, I don't, actually.
I feel a little guilty about this. So
So,
well,
you know why? Because I've been preoccupied with something that's really been annoying me lately. I know you find this hard to believe, but the city streets in Chicago have become undrivable.
Yes.
The bike lanes?
I concur.
The bike lanes? I know I've rallied against this, and I've seen people posting things on social media that I hate bikers, that you know, Dean's not a friend of people who would want to ride their bikes. It's not that. It's bikers who don't follow the rules and cut in front of you. Not so crazy about you. I'm not so crazy about anybody that cuts in front of me while I'm driving. You know, we all have these rules. They're called rules of the road, if I remember correctly from my driver's ed days. And we all have to follow them. If we're going to coexist on the roads, we all have to follow the rules. And cutting in front of one another and just ignoring stop signs and things like that, somebody's going to get hurt is part of it. But these new bike lanes and what they've done where virtually every street in Chicago now is one lane, resulting in major traffic jams everywhere you go.
Gridlock, yep.
Have you noticed that too?
Yeah, and if I'm remembering things correctly, when I grew up riding a bike, we actually rode towards traffic so you could see it.
Yeah.
Now you're on the other side. I mean, everything's behind you. I don't know if that would change anything just because you can actually see what's coming at you. But I agree with you completely.
Seems like that would make sense. But yeah. Also, I mean, you know, I'm all for having a bike lane, and I guess...
But respected, have the bikers respected too.
Yeah. The way that we had it before, there were cars and then the bike lane. And I guess, you know, they said it was too dangerous for the bikers to have the cars right next to them. So they moved the parked cars out, and the bikers are now close to the curb. So from the curb, it's bike lane, parked cars, moving traffic.
That's the case on South State Street.
Yeah. That's pretty much the case just about everywhere now. So here's the big problem with that. I mean, it's, you know, if everyone was considerate of each other, it wouldn't make any difference. But let's say that the cars can't be right next to the bikes. But here's the problem. I've seen three times now where emergency vehicles have to get past you. There's nowhere to push off to the side anymore.
That's true.
You know, so
which you're required to do when you've got an emergency vehicle behind you.
You got to try to get out of the
way. Get out of the way.
Except there's no place to get out
when
of the way
anymore. When you can't
move,
yeah.
Because the parked cars are now next to where moving traffic is. And the bike lanes, which for, 4 months of the year are virtually not even used during the cold weather. I mean, there are a few bikers out in the middle of wintertime, but not very many. But you can't even move over to let an ambulance go through anymore. That doesn't make sense to me. And, you know, as I'm like super sensitive about this now. You know, my mom, before she passed away, we had several ambulance rides when, you know, things were going bad. And if that ambulance that my mom was in had gotten stuck because of these stupid lane configuration things that we have now, I'd be even more upset than I already am. Somebody's relative is in that ambulance and can't get through because of this stupid configuration. It doesn't make sense.
You know, the other thing that's resulted from this, I don't know if you guys have had this experience too, but there's now traffic lights that have bicycle shapes on them, and they're red, yellow, and green, indicating when I go, I leave sometimes, I go on Milwaukee, and I make a little right-hand turn onto a soft right onto Elston, and there's a bike lane with a curb, and there's stop lights, and then there's also for bikes.
Yeah.
So when the bike light is green, people behind you start honking at you because they think that that's the right arrow. It's clearly in the shape of a bicycle, and that happens here in this building too. Underneath, if you get off Lakeshore Drive at Randolph, Lower Randolph, and come out and try to go to Columbus.
Yeah.
It's a right turn on arrow only, and there's a bike arrow or a bike symbol as well. And if I had a dollar for every time someone's honking their horn at me to go, I wouldn't be here right now because I'd be on an island somewhere.
Yeah, you'd be a millionaire, right? Exactly. And somebody, can someone explain the new colors of the lines on the street now?
Oh, the green and
I know they must mean something, but I have no idea.
Yeah, like red is for CTA buses.
Is it?
I think, yeah. Because there's an area that you go if you're going. I think it's west on Madison, just across Michigan Avenue, and the lanes swerve because there's a right hand section for just for the bus. If you have to make a right turn, well, you obviously can't make a right turn in front of the bus. But you don't know if you have to stay behind the bus or if you stay to the left of the bus and then wait for the bus to go. It's confusing.
You don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
I mean, you know, there's like, you know, solid lines and lines that are separated, right?
Yeah.
So, you know you can pass on. If it's not a solid line, you know you can pass. But when you go to make a right turn and it's multicolored, you're not sure if you're supposed to be in that lane or not supposed to be in that lane. I don't know who thought all this up. I have no idea who's to blame. But it is unbearable driving in the city now because of all of this.
I had a very close call. Fortunately, nothing happened once with a bicyclist going alongside me. You know, as you were saying, Andy, you know, when we were younger, you rode in the
traffic,
other direction,
yeah, right.
So you could see them and they could see you.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the cyclist. I was going fairly slowly, and there wasn't any traffic around. And then all of a sudden, he cut in front of me to go left.
Yep.
And had I been going any faster, there could have been a problem.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I saw him making that turn, and I hit the brakes, and then he just kind of looked over at me and waved.
Oh, you're lucky you didn't get the finger.
Yeah, you know, I guess he realized that he cut in front of me, you know. And then there was another time I had the light and was going through the intersection, and a bicycle rider just went right through knowing that I had the green. And again, I'm glad I was going very, very slowly, you know. And he just looked over at me and said, you know, it's kind of like
he cut in front of you.
It's you. Yeah. And then just kept on going.
Yeah.
So
I'm sorry. I mean, I'm all for safety.
Sure.
I'm all for you want to ride your bikes, ride your bikes.
And that's a very popular thing in this city.
Of course it is. Of course. And I am not as, despite what some people have said on social media, I'm not anti-biker.
No.
I'm not. I'm anti-idiot riders who are putting themselves and me in danger by not paying attention to any of the rules.
Can we talk about the scooters now?
Good, give it to me.
Same thing applies
give it,
there.
Give it to me, Mr. Potter.
No, it's Ben Weaver today. I want something done about it.
Scooter, Andy, I want you to do something about this.
I can get it done.
Citizens arrest.
And
citizens
you know it. And if you don't do it, you're not going to be wearing that badge. No, seriously.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
They feel like because they're on these little tiny little vehicles, a bike or a scooter, that they can do whatever they want.
And
they
boy,
don't have
they
to
move right down the road. They're just gliding away.
Yeah. And it's up to the motor vehicle person to not hit them.
Yeah.
I get that, but why not just follow the rules? What's the big deal about when the light is red, you have to stop too? When you are in a right lane, you can't turn, make a left turn from a far left turn cutting in front of everybody else who's over there. It just doesn't make sense. So that's what that's what's bugging me.
I'm done now. Is this a new segment for the show? What's bugging you today?
Well, that's pretty much every show.
That's every show.
To tell you the truth. All right, coming up, we're going to get into our Food Time segment, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. And today we're talking Passover recipes. Passover begins at sundown tomorrow. And there are traditional foods which will be eaten at Seder tables. But during the Passover period, there are certain foods which have become staples for those observing. And I'm going to be doing actually a couple of recipes for my Wednesday cooking segment on television. I'm going to do a beef brisket, which is I found a really simple, delicious recipe that whether you're celebrating Passover or not, I think you may want to try. I've got a potato kugel recipe, which is also very traditional.
that is pretty simple that I think you might want to try. But I know lots of you have recipes that have been in your families for long periods of time. And I would love for you to share some of those recipes. People have been texting and, you know, sending me ideas and things that they've done in their own families that I'm going to share some of those. But I would love if you did as well at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Maybe the most popular recipe on the show today was one that we got from Dr. Lauren Stryker, who did our health segment today, and she shared the recipe for the Jell-O mold that her grandmother used to make every year for Passover. That I think I'm going to give it a try. Dr. Stryker's going to be on the TV morning show on Wednesday when I'm cooking, so maybe I'll surprise her by cooking her grandmother's recipe. But it's a black cherry Jell-O that you, instead of water for the recipe, you put half water, half Manischewitz wine, and you let that, you know, congeal, you know, get into about halfway to Jell-O mold status, and that's when you put in some whole walnuts, not in the shell, of course, but you put in walnuts and whole cherries, and then let it continue to mold up. So the walnuts and cherries will, you know, fall into the Jell-O mold. It'll make it pretty. And now you've got this spiked Jell-O mold that Dr. Stryker's grandmother used to serve every year. And I think it's a riot. Those are the kind of recipes that I want to hear about. 312-981-7200. We'll get right to it. It is 12:37. Welcome into Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The award-winning All Things Edible program heard every Sunday at this time. And this week, we focus in on Passover. So tomorrow, this is a group called the Maccabeats, by the way, and they have done a variety of satire songs. They've taken traditional songs and turned them into parody songs. So they're very funny. And they did one which is a spoof of ABBA songs, which are all about Passover and Passover foods. I'll see if I can find one to play for you before we finish up here today. But that's what we're getting into today on the program. The foods of Passover. Some are very traditional for Seder tables, but some are foods in which people have had some creativity in their recipes. And those are the ones that I want to get into today. I'd mentioned that on my Wednesday TV cooking segment, that I'm going to be doing some Passover treats. I'm going to be doing a beef brisket, which is very traditional. But I'm going to do a little bit of a different twist on it. Lots of people roast them, and they cook them with potatoes and carrots, and kind of like a roast beef almost, which is great. And everybody's got their favorite traditional way of doing it. Mine is a little kind of a spicier version, which is done in a slow cooker, for one thing, a crock pot, basically. And let me pull up the recipe here so I can make sure that I tell you correctly what I'm talking about. But this Passover brisket is put into a slow cooker, and then you put onto it a mixture of chili sauce. You've seen that in the aisle where they sell ketchup and all that. It's kind of a spicier version, tangier version, I guess you might say, of ketchup. And you mix that with some Lipton onion soup mix and some garlic powder. And you pour that over the brisket. You put it in your slow cooker, 8 to 10 hours. The whole idea whenever you're cooking a brisket is low and slow, because that's what breaks down the veins of the beef brisket. They melt and make it so delicious and juicy, but it's got to be low and slow. Otherwise, you're going to have a chewy piece of shoe leather. And then once it's all done, you take it out, you cut it across the grain. Otherwise, it's going to be too chewy to eat. It's got to be across the grain, and you pour that gravy over the top of it. And it sounds like it's going to be delicious. I'm going to do a little experimenting with that, and then we'll do it on TV on Wednesday. Another of the traditional Passover recipes that we're going to be doing is a potato kugel, which is kind of a potato casserole. This is an onion and potato casserole that I'm going to be doing. And it's just basically taking like three pretty large-sized russet potatoes, a couple of fairly large onions, and grating them. So, and then, you know, putting them in a cheesecloth or someplace where you can kind of press the moisture out of them. And you do that several times. You press the moisture out of them several times before you mix them with a couple of large eggs and some olive oil and salt and pepper. And it simply goes into a baking dish and cooks for about 40 minutes until it's golden brown. And it's traditional. It's beautiful. You can get some nice parsley, chop up some nice parsley, and throw that in there on top of it for a nice garnish as well. Now, other people do different things. For example, the 217 area code says that they do Lithuanian kugel, and that is made with many of the things that I mentioned already, but they say that it's made with sautéed diced bacon and onion and a can of evaporated milk with the eggs. That sounds like that's a little more au gratin with the milk in there. But, you know, not that one is right and one is wrong, but, you know, that's the separation there. Also, there is, let me see here, we've got 630 area code that asks, do you sear the brisket before you put it into the slow cooker? I'm not doing the sear. I guess you could, but much of the outside of the brisket are layers of fat anyway that are going to melt off. So searing it is not going to make that big of a difference. You're going to wind up putting that thick sauce on top of it. So I don't think that you need to do a sear on top of it. So, you know, let me get some of your recipes here of things that you do. I had mentioned that last year for Passover, I made kind of a chocolate matzah, which could not be any easier. You know, people have always said, you know, matzah, it's traditional during Passover, but it's like eating cardboard. So, you know, what ways can we find to make it a little more delicious? So what I did was take the traditional matzah, lay them down on baking sheets, and then melted some chocolate on them, poured the chocolate and let it harden, and then bust it up. And it's like a piece of candy. It's almost like a chocolate-covered pretzel. You know, that's what it winds up feeling like. You can put nuts on it if you want. I think I put some orange zest on top of it. I happen to like chocolate with orange zest on top of it. So, you know, here's a couple of ideas for people taking matzah recipes, Passover recipes, and making it different. 630 area code texts in, my husband makes fried matzah. Same concept as French toast, but with matzah instead of bread. Interesting thought. There's an interesting thought for Passover. 312-981-7200. You can text it in. You can call it in. We'll get to your calls next. It is 12:46, and this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, now Sunday afternoon, into our Food Time show, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. Wanted to remind you that we've got our next Dean's Night Out all set for May the 12th. We're going to go out to the Paramount Theater in Aurora and see the Carole King musical, Beautiful. Paramount Theater has done nothing but amazing productions, and I'm sure that this one will be no exception. It's the story about how Carole King went from songwriter in Brooklyn to becoming a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, her rise to stardom. The show that we're going to see will be May the 12th, although the show is in production right now, and you can get tickets by going to ParamountAurora.com. But if you would want to join me, we're going to be giving away some pairs of tickets and also tickets to a little pre-show reception that we do with all of our contest winners. So we'll have a couple of drinks and then go see the show and have a good time. It'll be May the 12th. You can go to WGNradio.com to get more information on that. Over to the text line, and the 312 area code says, next time you do a Passover program before the holiday, do it sooner. As an observant Jew, it says here, I, as well as other observant Jews, will be unable to watch it on television on Wednesday. Okay, I was not aware of that. Thank you for telling me. We will keep that in mind for next time. I was trying to time it right around the holiday, but you know, it's I'm not aware of all the rules of who can, you know, what you can do and what you can't. So, thank you for telling me about that. Also, we've got a suggestion for matzah pizza. That sounds like that would be pretty delicious as well. Putting regular pizza ingredients on top of matzah. And here's one, matzah lasagna, where you use the matzah instead of noodles, but otherwise it's exactly the same as lasagna. And I can see how that would work perfectly as well. 312-981-7200. Here is, here's someone saying, for Passover, you can't have bacon. Well, I was just saying that somebody had texted in the recipe for the Lithuanian kugel. Not saying, you know, for Passover, just somebody had texted in alternative recipe. I know that you can't have bacon, and bacon's not kosher, but thank you for texting that in just the same. Here's another one that says, traditional Jewish recipes do not have bacon. And that's why I said it was a Lithuanian recipe. I didn't say that it was a traditional Jewish recipe with the bacon. But thank you all very much for all of the alerts on that. We'll be more careful in the future. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Anita, sounds like you're on the road.
I am on the road. I'm meeting my daughter to go shopping.
Oh, but, where are you going? What are you going to go buy me?
We're going to Deer Park. up north.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we're just meeting up.
Very nice. I'm glad you called in.
Yeah, I was listening, and I make a really good brisket, and your recipe sounds good. I do add French dressing to mine.
Oh.
And I just want to, and I wanted you to be sure that you get that really trimmed before you do it. And because there always is a lot of fat after, and your sauce that you're going to have is going to be full of fat, so you have to really drain that good.
Right, right.
So,
Have
you made it before?
Yeah, that's why I have not made it before, not in the slow cooker.
Oh, okay.
I've made it on the grill. I've smoked brisket, and I've done it on a traditional grill. And you're right. Yeah, the fat never stops.
There's a lot of gristle on it. So,
right.
You know, if you get it at the butcher, trim it really good, and still you have to drain that fat.
Right. Here's what I'm thinking with that is, you know, because you've seen this on TV where you go through all the whole process of cooking, and then you go, and through the magic of television, we happen to have one that's done already, and you pull it out from under the counter. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to make it at home the day before, and then I'm going to put it in the fridge. So I'm thinking that whatever fat don't take out will solidify, right, when I put it in the fridge?
Correct.
And I can lift all that fat right off of the gravy.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. Yeah.
So,
and also, don't forget, put a little manischewitz in there, too.
A little manischewitz, you'd say. Really?
Yeah. So I do it in the oven, but it's the same type of thing. covering it with the French dressing and the chili sauce. And,
okay. Oh, so you would do the chili sauce, the French dressing, and the Manischewitz?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Oh.
Well,
I could text the recipe if anybody's interested.
Yeah.
It's from a Jewish cookbook.
Okay, well, we'll see how it all turns out here. You know, most of the time it turns out pretty well. Every once in a while I have a little disaster, but all cooks do, don't they?
Right, absolutely. But I look forward to seeing the show on Wednesday.
I'm glad you called. Happy shopping today. If you need any of my sizes for anything that you're purchasing, just let me know.
Okay,
Nita, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. Okay, again, with the bacon and the kugel, the text, I get it. You don't put bacon in Passover kugel. And here is 847 area code. The Lithuanian dish is called kugelis, not kugel, kugelis. So there's a big difference. All right. And I think we've closed the subject on the bacon and the kugel. And I think I understand what you're all saying. It's 12:53. All right, coming up, Steve Dale with his program after the 1 o'clock news. This coming Wednesday at 9:35 is when we'll do our television cooking segment. We always do that. And this week we are this past week we did a nice spring recipe. We did a French onion tart. I just wanted to do something that was just kind of light for springtime. Mother's Day is coming up. It's a perfect Mother's Day brunch thing, and super easy. I love French onion soup. It's my favorite soup ever. And I was when I was coming up with the recipe for this, thinking, how can I incorporate? I don't want to make French onion soup when, you know, the weather's warming up. So what can I make? And I took the ingredients of a French onion soup. I caramelized, like 6 pounds of onions, something like that. It caramelizes down to nothing when you're done with it. But they're delicious, and my house smells fantastic when I caramelize onions. I took that. I took some shredded Gruyere cheese that I shredded myself. Always shred your cheese yourself. Don't buy it pre-shredded. It's got all kinds of chemicals in it, and it doesn't melt properly, and I think it doesn't taste proper. Some special spices that go in it, primarily a little rosemary, a little thyme, some Worcestershire went into it. Mixed up that mixture, and then I pre-baked some puffed pastries in muffin tins. I put it like for 5 minutes, not completely cooked all the way through, but I cook them just so they take a little shape. And I put this onion mixture in each of the cups, and then put more cheese on top of it, the shredded cheese on top of it, plenty of cheese on top of it, because you want it like, I wanted it to be like a French onion soup that's got the melted cheese all over it. And then you put it back into the oven, probably for about a total of 20 minutes or so. And when it's done, the puff pastry is delightfully light and golden brown and delicious. And it's got this wonderful caramelized onion mixture in the middle of it and the melted cheese on top of it. It was spectacular. It was so delicious and just exactly what I was hoping for, of something nice and light and perfect for springtime. And if you made something like this for Mom on Mother's Day, she would be absolutely delighted by. I mean, she'll think you worked all day on it, but really it's pretty something simple to put together. You want to get my recipe for that, really any of my recipes for any of the things I cook on TV, we keep them all at WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. You can go to the website, get the recipe for that, or anything that we have made over the last 4 years. We've got all the recipes and all the videos there, WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. And if you want to just get the recipe sent to you automatically every week, all you do is text the word cooks to 97999 on your mobile phones. Like you're sending a text message, send it to 97999 and just put the word cooks in there, and then automatically every week you'll get my recipes for it. Passover recipes are coming up this coming Wednesday on the cooking segment. This week on the TV morning show, we're going to be talking with Zendaya about her new movie, Challengers, a really interesting tennis movie in which she stars. David Desmalchian, who was in Oppenheimer and Ant-Man and all kinds of other great motion pictures, is going to stop by and visit with us on the TV morning show. And also, I'm going to be talking with Phil Rosenthal from the Netflix series Somebody Feed Phil about his Chicago appearance at the Chicago Theater on May the 4th. I will be co-hosting and kind of emceeing that Q&A with him.